Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
The mysterious Gram Box from More Beer brings you this Brewing Network Sunday session. See the Gram Box affordable control unit at morebeer.com.
Feels like work. Shooting the shit for 2 hours, drinking beer and talking beer. What a wonderful experience.
Can we not have the barf bucket near my mixing board?
I think everybody can read the book.
I knew you were going to use this book as an excuse to quit doing this show.
Mrs. Bub, if you want, I can mail you the Bub Timer.
Yeah, Newcastle. Especially in the can. Have you ever had it in the can? No, I have not had it in the can.
Notice I closed my eyes and I concentrated really hard.
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
All right, welcome to Downtown Joe's, everybody. Another live session from Napa. And it's 105 outside and only 100 inside. Come on in.
Yeah.
Plenty of cold beer, though.
There is some cold beer. I actually hung out in the wine closet for a few minutes where it's cool 40 degrees.
Yeah.
That's the place to be. With us today, we've got my co-host, Doc. JP made it out today. Welcome, JP.
Yeah.
Glad you could be here, JP.
Yeah.
It's good to see you, JP.
All right.
Yeah, you can make it out. Make it out the front door.
Feeling pretty good. I think I have a cold, though.
Oh, you do? You're not feeling well.
Yeah.
A cold what?
A cold cold beer for me, that's for sure.
All right, awesome. Awesome.
Tell them jokes.
And we've got Bevo, of course, running the chat room for you folks at home.
Hello.
Come out and join us at Downtown Joe's if you're in the neighborhood. It's the place you should be. A lot of familiar faces, as always, when we do these shows here. Some new faces. There's one staring at me really creepily right now. He's about 2 years old.
That's Brewer.
And his name's Brewer?
Yep.
Brewer. What's up, bud? He's a good-looking white kid, which is weird.
I love him.
I just want to point out.
I love babies.
You do, JP?
Yeah. I love babies and having them. And
even white babies?
Making them.
White babies, brown babies.
Creeper.
Gosh, and I love loving.
That kid's name's really Brewer? That's awesome. What's his middle name? What is it?
Bradley.
Okay. He's going to have problems when he's older, isn't he?
Brewer Bradley. No, he's going to be the...
it's a conversation starter, if anything.
No, it's going to get him some action, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, offensive. Yep.
You've got a good future ahead of you, Brewer, and glad to see you here in the Downtown Joe's hanging out with us. I was partying with a baby last night till about 4 a.m., as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
That's not a joke. I know this sounds odd, but...
It already sounds
that
odd.
That baby was a partier.
This baby was off the hook, as they say in the hood.
Drank from both teats.
If you could never say that again, that'd be cool.
I know, it's really weird, but that's kind of why I'm saying it. I closed down a bar with a baby last night.
Just you and the baby.
Yelling for more.
He was ready to go. I've done a lot of things in bars, but... Mm-hmm. Close it down with a baby is not one of them. We were hanging out with some good friends of ours, and they have a one-year-old child. I'm not going to say their names because I don't want anyone to call child services.
No.
But a good couple, we were having fun, and their baby was just like the chillest baby you've ever seen in your life.
It was awesome.
So we went to Hop Monk in Sebastopol for dinner, And when we were done with dinner, the baby was just, he was having a good time. So we moved over to the bar, and we did Last Call with the baby.
And three philosophers.
Yeah.
Six philosophers.
Did we pick up, six baby picked up last round?
The baby picked up the tab. And,
sweet.
It was a fun baby. And then we went back to the hotel, and we're like, oh, baby, we're tired. We're going. And he's, no.
Yeah.
Baby wants to rock.
Yeah.
Drove us home.
There's probably a pistol this morning, though, and the rest of the day.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're having fun with him right now. I'm pretty sure that's how Doc was when he was a baby.
Oh, yeah.
He had a joint in one hand and, you know, beer in the other.
That's a long time ago. They didn't have joints.
They didn't. When you were a baby, they didn't have joints.
Now.
They had spliffs is what they had back then.
Yeah, Doc looks the same now as he did then.
Yes.
When he was a baby.
Now, actually, playing the part of JP today will be Mr. Andy Wood. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you.
And round of applause for Andy.
No. Don't applaud.
What happens if true Stop. JP shows up?
I don't know. There could be some lapse in the time-space continuum. And
we start over again?
We have to start over.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's be honest.
And I don't know how JP's we would do a wonderful opening like this again. So I hope that doesn't happen.
This is a really good opening. And I feel honored to be here as a homebrewer and nerd. And I'd like to say hello to all my fans in the bar here in front of us.
Lots of fans.
Lots of nerds.
Yeah, see?
That, by the way, is not Andy's bedroom voice. That's his voice. And he's a very sexy speaker, is
Thank
what
you.
He is.
Thank you.
He has good voice.
He does. I've been camping with the woods for a couple days now, and the baby.
In the woods.
And the baby.
Not their baby.
Well, we both bought Volkswagen Westfalia buses at the same time.
The only way to travel.
Yeah. And so we've been together for a couple of days. I ran out of underwear. I borrowed some of Andy's.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you changed your underwear.
Well, we cheated last night because of that party baby, and we stayed in a hotel.
Yeah.
Because Party Baby was done with the woods.
What does that have to do with dirty underwear?
Well, it means I took a shower. I actually got a shower, and then I had to borrow
We took a shower.
Together.
At the same time.
To save water.
You know, underwear works four times.
But
front, back, inside, outside.
Well, we were on day four.
That's disgusting.
It's smart.
It is a good... It's how you pack light, Bevo.
Oh, yeah.
You can't fit your whole suitcase in the Westie.
You know?
Sure.
My underwear are a lot smaller than yours.
That's true.
Survivor, man.
That's true.
They're not smaller than mine.
Of yours.
I know you do.
I don't think Doc wears underwear.
Oh, yeah, I do. And they're small.
They're European.
Oh, yeah. Doc-style Euro underwear.
Love them.
With the string in the back.
I'm throwing up in my mouth right now.
You wouldn't.
All right. Oh. Well, we do have a couple beer-related things planned for you today that we'll get to eventually
out here
at Downtown Joe's. Let me give you the lowdown. For one, as always, if you're wearing BN gear, I think you get a discount. At least that's what the commercial says. Mm-hmm. I think you're supposed to get like 10 cents off
10%.
Your beer.
10%.
That's right. Buy a $50 shirt, get 10 cents off your beer. It's a great deal.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think you get 10% off if you have BN gear.
What if they buy it here?
Then they get 12% off, I think, was
the
deal.
Good,
confusing me with these numbers and stuff, Doc. But also, but it gets better. If you have BN ink, and I think there are people in this room that have BN Army tattoos to their body.
Let's see it.
You get dollar beers. And hold them to that, because they, Colin said, if you come in with ink, you get a dollar beer.
Non-temporary.
Now, friends and family of the BN don't count, so Sam does not get dollar beers, Bevo.
Damn it.
He has to pay full price for his beers. He has to pay double.
I was saying, Sam.
What was the whole point of him getting the tattoo?
It was for dollar. He got a $100 tattoo for dollar beers.
Plus, it's a good joke.
That actually saves money, believe it or not.
It's probably
true. You gotta look at the long term.
Yeah. You can come to Downtown Joe's for years and get your money back. So don't forget about those discounts. And if you're listening at home and wondering if you should come out to Downtown Joe's, you should. And you should wear your gear because you get a discount. We're going to be talking to brewmaster Colin Kaminsky today, as we always do on these shows. And he's going to be talking to us. They just did a bunch of renovations here.
Yeah, I noticed that. They took out my little private bathroom.
They did take out your...
It's still your bathroom. It just says office.
It says office
It's like
now.
The Fonz.
I can just pee in there.
You can.
There's a whiteboard in there.
Okay. I'm sorry. I forgot. I thought it was... you can do that.
They didn't even call to let me know.
They did like, was it Earthquake Retrofit? Is that what you're calling it? Yes. Because this is a historical building.
It is.
Here
well, historically, they have earthquakes.
Yes. So Colin's going to talk to us about how you have to, if you're a brew pub owner, or in his case, brewmaster, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through to make these things happen. So those of you at home who are thinking about opening up a brew pub one day, you can find out some of the ins and outs that Colin had to go through to make this happen. The other thing we're going to be talking about is brewing consistency today, which is something that I know zero about. But I have Doc here. I've got Tasty with me. And then, of course, Colin Kaminsky. He's always got something on his mind at this crazy place of his.
Yeah, the walls are 6 inches thick now. They used to be 4 inches thick. Think about that, you guys. Think of that's
that
math.
Just blew my mind.
There's a hologram of the wall in the wall.
Colin likes to do that,
which added the 2 inches. It's not real.
Yeah.
So your 6 inches is... Okay.
That's what my wife tells me. That's normal, right?
That's a radio six inches. Right there. Okay. No one can see it anyway. So Colin is going to talk to us about his brewing consistency.
Okay, all right.
And something you should know about Colin, if you don't know already, he does all sorts of crazy things, and he's into crazy things. If you're ever talking to him and he's just staring at you... And his head's kind of sideways, and he's giving you a look like he's going to bury you in the backyard somewhere. He's actually dreaming of making a hologram out of you.
Of you being buried in the backyard.
He likes holograms and builds guitars and rocket ships, and I think he used to race motorcycles.
Airplanes.
He used to train pandas.
I think he built some DNA once.
I think he did that. There's actually a little Colin
morning.
In the fermenter. He built his own Colin.
There's a little Colin in every beer here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's disgusting.
A lot of little Collins.
There's about a zillion Collins in every beer.
And I'll tell you what, the mouthfeel, creamy and delicious.
That secret ingredient.
And I'm done.
Mock JP's kind of funny.
I like it. And he hasn't yelled at me yet.
And he's kind of upbeat, too.
I love you, Bebo.
I love you, Mock JP.
You're doing something wrong if you're not screaming at Bebo.
Mock JP, could you say something for me?
Ouch.
Sure. In your face, say that.
In your face.
Perfect.
Good.
I think I licked the microphone when I said that.
All right, so we're going to get to all of those things and more today. I have a couple of announcements for you. I'm just going to read off the top of my head because I've been camping for 3 days. Yeah. I didn't bring any of them with me.
Oh, good.
Okay. Let's see. You can buy merchandise in the store. You just hit the store button on the BN homepage, and you can buy shirts and hats and all sorts of things like that. What else do I usually announce? You can find all of these announcements over on Twitter and on
Facebook.
You can do that, yeah. And I think that's all that I had to announce. Other than next week's show is going to be a lot of fun. We've actually got Chris White coming into the studio once again. Well, it was going to be Chris White and Dr. Lewis from Davis. He had to cancel, family obligation. Oh. But we are still going to talk yeast with White, and then we'll get them both back in the studio for the yeast mega... yeast thing that they would do.
Those two brains would do.
So also, I guess that means you won't be showing up next week that they're both not there.
I was going to risk, ostracization from my family, but okay.
Now you don't have to.
Well, I might still do it.
Yeah. And the chat room, you forgot to mention, is free.
Oh, yes. You can enter the chat room for
chat
free.
Room
just hit
free.
The chat now button. Bebo's over there. And before you start asking here, although you probably already did, there is no video today.
There is no video.
There will be no video camera. I've run out of laptops, so everyone is doing something.
Head.
And if you're creepy, I'll kick you out.
Yes. There you go. Bebo's... She's going to rule with an iron fist today.
Can you be creepy once or twice and then kicked out?
Usually get one warning.
Oh, good. So you actually warn them?
Yeah.
I just...
Just kick them right out.
Yeah.
All right, so lots of things to do today. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll sit down with Colin Kaminsky. We'll start talking about the renovations they've done to Downtown Joe's and how this place got so beautiful.
Sweet.
Especially the bathroom. I really want to talk to you about the bathrooms.
Bathroom is amazing.
They have those waterless toilets.
Really?
Amazing piece of technology.
Wow.
All that and more when we come back live from Downtown Joe's. Hang in there.
Listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
And the new tap handle?
$5 instead of $13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of $25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer Deal of the Day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer Deal of the Day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tailwagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
BN Army members, are you looking for a discount on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. Choose from varieties like Amarillo, Centennial, East Kent Goldings, Holly Tower, Simcoe, Summit, Tomahawk, Warrior, Willamette, and more. And adding new varieties all the time, many for less than $20 a pound. Whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag, all hops are shipped vacuum-sealed and frozen straight to you. Nico's Homebrew Supply offers store-wide $5 flat rate shipping and won't waste your money on unnecessary overhead or advertising. They're going bare bones and passing the savings on to you. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. And for a limited time, use coupon code BNARMY at checkout for a Brewing Network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's NikoBrew.com for your hops and more. NicoBrew.com, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
The Brewing Network, saving your life.
One beer at a time.
To the program. We're broadcasting live from downtown Joe's today in beautiful Napa. It's great weather out there today. I like when we do the summertime shows with you because it's sunny and warm and then...
Not so moist.
It can
wet.
Get a little hot.
Yeah. It's nice today. I don't mind it. It's a little warm in this
mid-80s.
Chair.
Yeah, well...
Right here. You know, I got emitting heat from all my equipment, but it's fine. And we're with Colin at the... I should call it the all-new downtown Joe's, really, shouldn't I? You've done a whole renovation here.
Well, you know, we spent $750,000 to make the building look exactly the same.
Oh, my God.
and that was kind of hard. They literally cut a hole 2 feet wide all around inside the building, around the whole perimeter of the building, built a brand new building to hold the old one up.
I see. That's and, that historical
and,
thing.
And then hit it all. And
They did a nice job.
They did do a nice job. You can hardly tell.
Yeah, if you look at the first 2 feet of tile, though, they're brand new all the way around.
I see. The shiny tile.
Yeah. right.
$750,000. Yeah. That's more than my salary. I'll tell you that right now.
You know, it's more than mine, too.
Yeah, it's more than you've made since you've been here, probably.
It's more than I've made my entire life.
That is a lot of money. Now, when it's a historical building. Yeah, Doc's like, I made that last week. What a pick. When it's a historical building, does the city get involved and say, well, we'll help you pay for that?
No, in all honesty, we probably had the option to claim that it wasn't an historical building, depending on what argument we wanted to make with the city.
Okay.
But our argument with the city was we wanted it to be a historical building. We sat down with the engineers, and we really decided that what we wanted to do was keep this historic building a showpiece of Napa.
Okay.
And... And that wasn't easy. It probably cost us double what it would have cost if we would have just put big X braces everywhere and through bolted through everything. And
right.
But we didn't. We epoxied into everywhere. We hid everything behind the walls. There's three steel beams in this room. That's pretty much all that shows.
Yeah. Everything else does it looks like the building I used to see, but painted.
But painted, fresh paint.
It's not obtrusive. I really didn't notice it, but now you just say it. Yeah, I know what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So those three beams are cantilevered out of 30 yards of a concrete gray beam underneath this floor.
Okay.
And then it's all welded into a tray that holds the whole front of the building together. And if we didn't do that, it was going to have X braces through all the glass.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So this is where I want to be in the case of the earthquake.
Yeah, you want to grab onto one of those big steel beams and ride it
just
out.
Just stay right there.
I could see you just screaming and crying like a little kid.
Like a girl. Like the smallest girl you've ever seen. Now, my favorite part about the renovation, and I'm being honest here, is the bathrooms.
And yeah, we were able to make big improvements here.
They're big, and they're very high-tech. For one, you've got the waterless urinals.
Yeah.
So
it's high-flow, low-flow.
Yeah.
I'm high-flow,
Those are low flow. And it might surprise you to find out that I'm really kind of a nerd about these things. There's an article in Wired Magazine this month all about the waterless toilets. And there was like a 10-year battle to make these things legal for establishments like you to use. Because the plumbers union didn't like that they no longer had the water trap underneath them and that they weren't being flushed to get rid of waste. They thought that it was a public health issue, right? Or that it was really cutting into their dollar bills because they wouldn't have to plumb these toilets anymore. It would just be a straight pipe to the sewer.
With no water supply.
With no water supply.
Right.
So, I know that everyone's fascinated by this, as I am. So, the company that did it kept fighting and saying, you know, I guess they came to an agreement. How about this? We'll allow you to use the waterless toilets if you allow us to plumb water to them. The water won't be used. It's just there and stopped off in the wall.
Just in case you want to go back.
In case you want to go back to the water one. But meanwhile, Colin here is saving millions of gallons of water every year by going to these waterless toilets.
And we don't have any plumbing to it in case we want to go back. So
that's right. It's amazing. And it turns out they're as safe as can be. There's like this weird little... You guys really are fascinated by this, right? There's a cartridge that goes in the toilet that keeps the
stench?
Fumes, the dangerous things from the sewer from coming up at you. And as long as Colin changes that cartridge on a regular basis, we're all safe.
Well, ours are actually even a little higher tech than that.
Unbelievable.
So it's not a cartridge because that would be something you'd have to throw away. What there is in there is a liquid... And it sits in a trap. There is a little bit of a trap. And it sits in, and there's about 2 inches of this liquid.
I see.
And it's lighter than your urine. So when you pee, and it sanitizes anything, when you pee, the pee just drops right through it.
Right.
And it floats to the top. And once a month, you change that out.
This is amazing.
You just pour a bunch of water through it, flush it out, put some more in.
And it's good to go. Millions of gallons of water, ladies and gentlemen. This is amazing.
Right here.
This is no underestimation. I bet we save 15,000 gallons of water a year by going to waterless urinals.
Yeah. That is so great. And then the other wonderful thing about the bathroom, because I'm such a germaphobe, is I don't have to touch anything in it except for the door. I wish the door was auto, but the paper towels come out with a wave of a hand, the water, the soap.
I got a comment on the paper towels that come out. Wave your hand, and you get enough of them here.
Like a full towel.
I do leave it set.
You set it to here. It's like...
And then you got to do it again. Yeah. And it doesn't like the second wave. Yeah. Not like the first.
When you buy the dispensers, it comes set at a really long length. And you have to actually dial that back.
Yeah,
and I never dial them back. So,
no.
They're
going to use it anyway.
That's what I think, too. And if I need less, I just tear off less. I mean...
I don't do that.
Doc's very wasteful. He doesn't care.
Well, no, I don't. If I get a good enough, I just use it once, and that's the one I open the door with, and we're good.
Garbage can's right next to the door.
That's what I'm saying. The worst bathrooms in the world have the garbage can on the other corner because you can't do the...
But they also have a pile of paper towels laying in the corner on the floor.
And that's usually my pile of paper towels. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't wash my hands. So.
See, Andy doesn't either.
I save...
I think about the environment, and I don't want to use too much paper and paper products. So
I see. Well, thank
you. I usually wipe my hands on the back of the person leaving in front of me in a way that he just can't really feel it.
It does save a lot.
Yeah.
The guy on the way in.
But we also have low-flow faucets in the bathrooms, and we have low-flow toilets for the normal toilets in the, in the women's and the men's. So water conservation was a big part of the plumbing design in the bathrooms.
It's amazing. They're great, and I love them, and I thank you for doing that.
I can't wait to pee in them.
The only thing I don't like, I used to just be able to walk into that door right there and pee on the guy's desk.
Yeah, I know.
It was a urinal then.
Right.
Now it's Joe's desk.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
Yeah.
It was habit.
I like that little bathroom.
Yeah, you know what I liked about it was nobody knew about it, so you could just sneak in. But now there's no lines.
B&A 3, it's like everybody's just in here, and I just
walk right there.
Because nobody knew where it was.
But now we have so many stalls, there's no lines here anymore for the bathrooms. It used to be tons of lines.
Andy and I still shared a stall, even though there was an available one.
That's why there's a camera in the stall.
Yeah. There is now.
we're going to post that live later.
Colin is big on webcams. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
You're so gentle, man. It feels cleaner in there, which I like about my public stalls where I have relations with.
Now, how about the brewery? Did you do any brewery renovations?
You know, the aging cellar's got 18 7-barrel Grundys in it, so I have a lot of aging space. So I didn't really want to do much with that. The problem was is it was a concrete slab poured with no rebar over a 120-year-old wood floor.
Okay.
Who thought of that?
Yeah. Like
it was in the budget at the time, right? So 22 years ago, they made that decision, and we've been living with it ever since. So one of the things we needed was a shear wall in the middle of the building. And so the idea came up with the engineers. If we make the shear wall tie into this floor, we can tear this whole floor out. We can make a suspended concrete floor with no more wood. And
I don't like that.
What I did was I gained 9 inches of height.
Okay.
And
I'd like that.
It can't rot.
And you can't what?
It can't rot at this point.
I see.
There's no way for concrete to touch wood.
Okay.
Oh, again.
There's actually an air gap between all the concrete and the rest of the building.
Shouldn't be touching wood.
How do they do that?
The contractor wasn't happy with the blueprint, but
I see.
He made it work.
Now, I have seen, I saw what was your aging cellar before, Colin, and it amazed me that you could move in there and do it. I mean, you had tanks just stacked on top of each other and lines running everywhere. It seemed like a difficult work environment.
You know, it kind of was, but you kind of got used to it. Really, the difference is now is I have a little bit more room between the tops of the tanks, so it's easier to do things like dry hopping and fining and things like that. They're not so compressed. Instead of having 4 inches, I have 9 inches.
You can get in there.
Above each tank.
Oh, I get those emails too, by the way. Add 9 inches to your Grundy.
Which turned out to be a really big deal convenience-wise. The other thing I did, since I had all the tanks out, was I put all the CO2 in solid plumbing on the back wall.
All right.
So now instead of having a 20-foot CO2 line that goes to every tank from a unified manifold, there's a little tiny 4-foot CO2
plumb
line
to each Grundy.
From a copper line to each Grundy. And that made the spaghetti mess a lot easier to think about.
Right. Well, Doc, I know you're loving this. You're a geek about these kind of brewhouses.
Yeah, I've got a lot of ideas here.
Did you go back and check it out yet?
No.
You have to give us a tour.
I put my head back there to check it out. I was hoping to see
I thought that
around.
Was why I was doing the sound check, was because Schumann was giving Doc the tour.
Yes, he was getting the tour. So our friend Josh is in from Australia. He's on like a whirlwind tour, and he's who ate all the pies in the forum.
He's who ate all the pies.
Son of a bitch. So Josh met Schumann the other night, and the first thing he said to him was, "So do I get the tour or what?" He was at EJ Fair, and he wanted to. No one's ever asked Schumann for the tour before. Usually you just get it. But no, Josh was ready for it. He thought, "Hey, I'm in America. I'm going to live it up.
Yeah.
Do the whole experience."
Yeah, you can't go home without the tour.
Yeah. So the brew house itself, though, I did walk by it. It's the same.
The brew house is exactly the same. We had to replace two walls in the fermentation cellar but we were able to tie it in without much change. I lost about 2 inches on each wall. Okay. Had to take a 2x4 wall out and put a 2x6 wall back in.
Okay.
So not that big of a deal. It did shut the fermentation down for about 3 weeks. The aging cellar was shut down for almost 4 months.
How did you deal with that?
What's the downtime?
Well, where we're sitting right now, there were three Grundys and a bunch of kegs. And
so for folks at home, that's right here in the bar.
In the middle of the bar. And I drilled a hole, a 4-inch hole in one of the tiles, and brought the draft line over here.
I see.
And took a bunch of tap boxes and put tail pieces on both sides.
I see.
So what it would do is it would go out of a warm Grundy, through a box of ice with 100 feet of coil,
okay,
into my draft system, and come out at the bar.
So just like we would do on a jockey box. You built a giant jockey box.
I built a giant jockey box that had to run for months. And the first time the beer ever got cold was on your way to the glass.
Is that right?
It would literally age at 68 degrees, and it would get cold on your way to the glass.
You did this all yourself, didn't you?
In about 6 hours, I was in a hurry.
On your hands and knees, making it work. Yeah, okay.
Awesome. Now, let me ask you this, because as home brewers, we generally don't want to do that, and as a brewer, you don't either. Could you taste the difference in that beer?
You know, the biggest concern I had wasn't that. I was a little concerned about that, but I figured, you know, I'm going through a tank every 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm not really worried about it, you know, because I know I'm putting fresh beer in it. You know, it's not like it's sitting there for 6 months warm.
Okay.
So I figured the beer would survive that pretty well. What I was more concerned about was I didn't have a floor drain, so I had no way to clean tanks.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So how I was cleaning tanks was I was pouring hot water through the top out of a 1 gallon jar,
right,
basically, through the top, looking in the windows, trying to rinse all the yeast out visually.
Hi, I'm the most inefficient man in the world.
It would take an hour and a half to rinse one tank and use about 5 gallons of water.
Oh, man. That is homebrew style. Even Doc won't clean a tank without a floor drain nowadays.
No. And I had no way to sanitize. So I had to deal with whatever was in my tap water and calling a rinse good enough. And that scared the crap out of me.
Now,
I had one tank that filled four times that way, and I didn't notice any
hot
flavors.
Water? Really?
It was as hot as my water heater gets. So
and that was it?
And that was it.
Wow. You're scared. And Doc just puckered, by the way. That's scary.
One tank I filled four times, and I didn't get any off flavors, but it scared the crap out of me.
Sure.
And, of course, as soon as I got them in a room where I had a floor drain, I ran hours of caustic through them just so I don't have to think about it ever again.
Now, why not just bring in other people's kegs and not serve beer, your own beer, during that period? Is it too expensive?
No, it's a pride issue.
I see. You wanted to solve this problem. And your beer.
And I had 8 beers on tap. I had 5 guests and 3 of my own.
Wow. Okay. I like this. It just was see, and Doc's a little like that too. He's like, well, I got to do this. I got to figure this out.
Make it work.
There's a way to make this happen. And I talked to Denise over at Moylan's. I talked to Brian over at Moonlight. And they're like, oh, no, you can totally do this.
Really?
And
they encourage you to do
these
things.
And they encouraged me to do it. And they gave me a lot of options for what I might try. And when I had all the parts in hand, that was what came to mind.
Wow. Andy, you come here a lot. Did you see any of this in action?
I think we brewed here with Paul about a year ago, I think.
Yes.
And that was before all the stuff. And then we came around Mother's Day.
Yeah.
That was when there were 3 beers on tap.
That's true.
And it was those 3 tanks, or 3 Grundys, right here on this wall.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that. And there was a lot of plywood around. That's all I remember seeing. There was a lot of plywood.
But the beer was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't detect a difference or a big difference in any of the beers.
Yeah.
I certainly noticed the difference in the beers. But all of which were equivalent to recipe changes.
Okay.
They weren't like, oh, this is infected or this is whatever. It's like, you know, this isn't quite the recipe.
What about your regulars? Did they have anything to say to you about it?
90% of the regulars were really supportive about everything.
Sure.
About 10% said, you know, this doesn't quite taste like it used to. Well, you know, when I got my aging cellar, it will.
Okay.
And
just hang in there. Bear with us.
And none of them said this is bad. It was just different.
See, I'm not Budweiser, goddammit.
Yeah. So let me ask
you. They already know that.
Right. And by the way, we are going to talk about brewing consistency later. So it'll be an interesting swing from this topic that we have here. Let me ask you a little more about the cash part of it. So $750,000. And then do you have an estimate of how much you lost in business because you had to shut down certain parts of the bar and restaurant?
You know, no, I don't.
Would you say it was a lot more than the...
I would say by the time we, you know, anytime you open up an old building like this, you run into things that are problems.
Sure, that you didn't expect.
Yeah, so you've got the electrical contractor that's sitting at the bar, and you say, hey, I've got this box that's full of water. Could you rewire it before the contractors come back tomorrow?
Got it. So and, you use your resources.
Right, so we did a lot of that trying to save money because we just didn't, we were bumping into the edge of our loan every day.
Okay.
And so we did a lot of that. I would say, I would guess estimate we spent another $750,000.
Wow. So,
You know what I really like about this is it's costing your owners a lot of money. Are you part owner?
No.
And he's an employee, basically. You get it. He gets it.
He's
got to get this done. He's got to get this moving. It's got to work because he knows what's going to come out in the end. It's not, well, I just come in here, it's a pain in my ass, and now I got to brew beer around all this crap.
He's still looking out for Joe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You get it. You're into it for the big picture, and it's got to make it work.
It's a good point. A lot of employees aren't that way.
No.
I've been studying the blueprints for 3 years, and when the general contractor came in, they'd had them for about 3 weeks. So I knew way more about what they needed to do than they knew.
Sure.
And so that was a big part of 6 months of my life was they're about to start something that's like, okay, you're going to start this. I've been through this building. I know what this building was built like.
Right.
I'm the one who cut everything open so that we could see how this building was built.
Yeah.
You're going to run into this problem. You're going to run into that problem. You're going to run into this problem. Make sure you can deal with it on time.
Okay.
Because it was really important to us that we didn't run over budget. But what was more important to us is that we didn't run over time.
Okay.
And so
because that's more money.
Because, right, because we have lost business.
Yes.
You know, they were calling for an end date of July 4th, and I did not, or June 4th, rather.
Okay.
And I did not want to go past June 4th. So every time they would start to open a wall, I'd say, okay, this is what you're going to run into. This is what you need to be prepared for. And the site superintendent was phenomenal.
Okay.
I'd tell him what was going on. He'd get in there. Have a contingency plan. He'd get a estimator down to give us a quote.
Right.
Everything would be done. It might cost a little more than normal. Might have been done a little different than the blueprints, but we were spot on our times.
Right.
And that was my goal. And it literally, you know, they're like, well, what do you do if you're not brewing? Babysit everybody.
Yeah. I was going to just comment on that, too, that it's a good thing you're so personable, Colin, because otherwise you'd be the most annoying guy in the world. Every time the contractor walks in, you have a whole story for him about the wall.
I think I danced the line.
yeah. But you save them time and money as well, so I'm sure that... but like I said, you're personable, so it gets by.
He knew it was a valuable thing.
Yeah.
He probably did half his job.
Right. Yeah.
He would have just dragged it out if you would have been diligent about...
Everybody would have had to stop and think. And what I did
God
was
God forbid.
And what I did
they
was I said,
thought.
Okay, we've been thinking about this ahead of time. This is what we want to do when we get here. And so when it came up, instead of the contractor saying, okay, you've got these 7 options, we could do all this, I've already said, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is a problem you're going to run into. Just give us a number so we can keep moving.
Okay. Now, how about regulations? You go to the city and you say, we got to do this renovation. Or did they come to you? I don't know how it even started.
But it started when the city passed a law that said every building that was unreinforced masonry had a mandatory retrofit, had to be completed by a certain date, or they were going to come in and do it for you.
Oh. Would they pay for it if they came and did it for
you?
No,
they would put it on your property taxes, and you had to pay it the next time your property tax was due.
Okay. And they would do it whatever way they saw fit, of course.
And of course, close you down.
And shut you down totally.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is how
it
comes about.
So we didn't close a single day. We didn't lay off a single employee.
That's pretty amazing, actually. And good for you. Because it's a lot of money. If I'm Joe, I'm pretty scared about this retrofit.
Joe had a lot of sleepless nights.
Yeah. Because, and now you mentioned that it was a loan. Joe doesn't have $750,000 sitting in the back office to do this kind of...
If he does, he hasn't shown it to me.
Right. So you got to go take a loan, and you got to do all this. Now, is the city, do they fight you the whole way with how you have to do it, or do they help you?
No, they were, the building department was actually really good. So what we did, as soon as we found out that this is something we were going to have to do, we called in an engineer, which turned out to be the wrong choice. But we called in an engineer, and we crawled through the building with him, and we were really happy with what he saw, what his ideas were, how he was going to be able to work with the historic nature of the building. And we had him draw blueprints. That was about $40,000 for him to inspect the building and draw blueprints.
What is he, a doctor? Good Lord.
Yeah.
How long did it take him to do all that?
About 9 months.
I see, okay.
And it was two guys, and it was a big part of their work for about 9 months.
Wow. Two guys.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two guys.
All right.
And so we had to measure everything and draw it out, and then they had to come back and say, well, do you want us to do this or do you want us to do that? And Joe and I met with him a lot and made what were the beginnings of all the good decisions.
Okay.
About 2 years later, that finally got through the city and approved, and we're ready to build it. And we decided we better bring in an architect so that we could design the finishes and figure out where things went.
Sure.
You know, where are you going to put the toilet? You know, this is the new bathroom. Where's the toilet going to go?
Okay.
Well, we didn't have any of that. That's not the engineer's job. That's the architect's job.
I see.
Well, the problem ended up being is the architect just kind of said, well, this is how you've got to build the bathroom because it's the only place to go that'll work. And you have some big structural beam right where you want to put a drain for a toilet or where you want to put, you know, something.
Right.
Because normally what you would do is bring in an architect first. The architect would bring in an engineer and then everything would happen.
They work together. I see.
And they would work together.
So this was a mistake on your part.
We did it backwards.
Okay.
It caused the general contractor no end of grief.
I see. Because he would look at the plans and find, like you said, a beam right where something important was supposed to go.
Right.
Other than a beam.
So they would be drilling a 3-inch hole through 12 inches of wood.
I see.
Yeah.
He was an angry contractor on that day.
Right.
Yeah.
12 inches of wood.
Happens to wood every day.
He knows how that feels.
So am I.
Happens to Kim every day.
Every day.
Drilling wood.
Right.
It's a curse.
Okay, so you do that backwards and you learn from it. So folks at home, I hope you're taking notes. Learn from this mistake that they made.
Yeah. Bring in your architect first and let your architect coordinate everything.
Okay.
But the other thing that was really odd for us, which just really never crossed our mind because we didn't think about it. You think, oh, you just take a big loan. They transfer the money to your bank account. You pay people as you go.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You would think, right?
Yeah.
How else would it work?
They actually manage every bit of the construction. And they have to have an independent person come out and verify that a task has been completed. And then on the first of the month, they cut a check.
Oh.
And if that task is 20% completed, they cut 20% of that check. And they keep track of everything.
Wow.
So if you're looking for...
Is it a certain kind of loan then? I mean, what is the loan called?
Construction loan.
It's just a construction loan, but it has to go to...
That's how the bank makes sure you don't just go to the Bahamas with $100,000.
I see.
And leave the project short.
Or pay your contractors and they go to the Bahamas.
Right.
I see. Well, it's kind of...
Because
sense.
Because their collateral is the building.
Okay, all right.
And if the building's half done, they'd have no collateral.
Okay. So it's just a big pain in the ass for you, though, because the contractor wants to get paid right now, and
they were used to it. We just weren't. We just had no idea. It's like,
really?
How do they get paid?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
You know?
So you didn't get the lump sum at all?
We didn't get any. We never saw any of it.
They cut checks straight to the contractors.
They cut checks straight to the contractors, and every month we would have a meeting with the bank and agree on what got finished. Was there a cut list left on that job? And everything in that regard. And then as soon as we signed off on it, they got cut a check.
This whole thing makes me want to shoot myself in the face.
Yeah. You know, Colin, I thought you were just here making beer.
Right. You don't get to do that anymore? You have to go through all this?
Well, now I have 20... Let's see. What day did I get my aging seller back? March 15th, roughly.
Okay.
I had 23 empty tanks in the building. I'd used my last keg of porter, which was my last beer.
Okay.
I'm using about 30 barrels a week of beer, and I can produce 35 barrels a week.
Wow. Wow.
If I just...
Right.
You know,
if everything's
sit down,
fine.
If everything runs perfect and I don't get drawn off to go fix the kitchen or get a steam table running or
yet you're so happy, Colin, and you don't seem to be stressed out when I see you.
I am a lot less stressed out than I was 2 months ago.
You smoke a lot of weed, right?
I wish. No, I actually,
something.
I quit 22 years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So what? Yoga? What do you do?
I do yoga when I can.
You do?
I do. Yeah, I really like yoga.
Okay.
I do meditation. I like to swim.
Okay.
Those are all things that chill me out. What chills me out more than anything is laying on the couch watching TV with my 4-year-old.
Oh, okay.
That you know, watching Finding Nemo for the 125th time.
Right.
You just get into the Zen moment. And
you're both giggling.
I love this part.
Yeah. The kid's asleep. Colin's still watching. This is great.
I love that movie. It's my favorite.
See, Vivo likes it too. All right, I'm going to get us to a break, but I have an important question first.
I have to use those waterless
urinals. The new waterless urinals, right? Andy and Kim Wood came and brewed with you a year ago.
Yeah.
Did they totally screw everything up?
No, actually, they were really good, and they had a really good spirit about it. When people come brew with me,
yeah.
There's some deep cleaning that gets done.
Ah, yes.
Something usually doesn't get done. Yeah.
Well, things that only get done once a week definitely get done the day I have a guest brewer.
I see.
Right.
So and he's like, wow, I haven't seen Kim on all fours in years.
So Kim climbed into the mash tun and scrubbed it all out.
Wow.
But she wasn't willing to climb into the boil kettle. But Andy...
But Andy,
it was a little claustrophobia issue.
Oh.
Because it's a little tiny door, and you got to be in there for about 45 minutes with a scrubby.
Right.
It's not like you're in there, you know, with a big fire hose. You're in there with a scrubby.
And if the earthquake hits then, I'm just going to wait here.
I would wait there, yeah.
Well, I jumped in the boil kettle.
I hope you have cell reception there.
Yeah, I think I started using the scrubby for about 10 minutes, and I thought I was finished. And
right.
So I popped out. I was like, yeah, okay, I think I'm done. And you start sweating, you know.
It's 100% humidity in there and about 80 degrees.
Okay.
Right. I lost 10 pounds, which is great.
Yeah.
And Colin comes and goes, you're not done.
He's like, no, actually, it should take about an hour.
Andy did a good job. I walked in, I peeked in, and I said, you know, it usually takes about 45 minutes, and it looks like a brand new penny.
Yeah.
And he goes, and he jumped back in and he did it. It was beautiful.
That was awesome.
He did a great job.
It's fun to brew here. It's like a giant homebrew system.
Okay. It is. It's a giant homebrew.
Single-tier.
In fact, a lot of what More Beer systems are I brewed in this brewery and then I got hired at More Beer. And it's like, well, why don't we have this? Well, why don't we have that? So a lot of stuff you see in homebrewing was taken from this brewery and ported into small systems at More Beer.
Okay. Well, and it makes sense because Graham is he's self-proclaimed laziest man alive, so he wants to make it all as easy and automated as possible.
And he also says you brew better beer when you have better equipment.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's true.
He especially says you brew better beer when you spent more money on your equipment.
Right. Well, Andy, what did you guys brew?
We brewed the double IPA. I think.
Were you happy with how it came out?
Did you get to try it? I don't remember.
We did. Yeah.
Last time we were at the show,
the Doublewood IPA. That's right.
Oh, I would have had it too.
It was a lot of Columbus hops. It was really, really not as good as I thought it would be. It was great. But it's cool to get to know how to put together a recipe for, is it 7-barrel or 10?
Yes, 7-barrel.
7-barrel system. Yeah. And, you know, get up in the grain room, which is like you have to climb a ladder to get into a tiny space where there's a dead hobbit, and you have to get past the dead hobbit to get the grain in the hopper.
Right.
But it was really cool. Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah. And for people who haven't been up there, my grain room's 3.5 feet tall.
Oh.
And I keep
like
about
dock.
Two tons of sacks of grain in there.
Yeah. You need a dock-sized grain room guy is what you need.
But Colin's awesome. He'll have any homebrewer who wants to brew out here on a professional system.
Well, and that's the... I remember the Woods saying to me, it was a few months ago, I was talking about coming to brew with you, and they said, yeah, it's weird because Colin, he invited us like at the last show, why don't you come brew with me? And he actually meant it. He said, hey, can we brew? And he said, yes, I invited you, didn't I? And they were really just a bit, because a lot of guys will say, especially once we feed you a few beers, right? Come on back and brew, and you don't mean it. But Colin meant it.
Yeah, no, I tend to do 3 or 4 of them a month.
Really?
And yeah, so it's a for, it's a big part of what I do. I think it's really fun.
Okay.
You know, and I've gotten guest brewers in that know more about brewing than me.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's like, hey, well, this is a part of the process. This is kind of what I'm concerned about. I'll see you in about 45 minutes. I'm going to go get a beer.
See, Colin also doesn't have that ego thing. He's like, shit, I'll take a break.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. We were just kind of pinching in, and he's like, yeah, call in there. I do it all the time. And we just took away all the hard labor.
Right. Yeah, he just turned the dials.
But we weren't.
One of the homebrewers that helped me do it was in his 50s. And he said, you know, this really feels like Tom Sawyer. and you just got me to paint the fence and like it.
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
and you know, in retrospect, that is kind of what I do.
I love it. All right, come on out to Downtown Joe's if you're still contemplating why you should be here. It's because you get a 10% discount on beer for wearing BN Army swag and dollar beers if you have BN Inc. And you get to hang out with Colin and check the new place out.
And last time you guys were here, we had more BN Inc. than before. So Bevo, I think it's dollar beers these days.
Yeah, Sammy too, although I said he has to pay double for his beers. Anyway, but yeah. And Terrence is here now, and Terrence the Black has one as well.
Yeah.
Although his needs to be redone. We have to call your tattoo guy.
Oh, okay.
Because he...
Rob lives like two blocks from here. We could have him here tonight.
Maybe we should do it tonight, because for
he's
one,
here.
Terrence is black, and it didn't show up that
really?
Well. And the other thing is, he rejected all the... Do you have any tattoos, Colin?
I do, but it's henna. It looks like henna, but it's ink.
Okay. Because sometimes what happens is your skin will heal properly, like it's supposed to, and as it does that, it gets rid of a bunch of ink. And then you have to have it redone. And that's what happened to Terrence's. He's the only one that ejected the ink.
Spit the ink.
But we're going to have to get that
face.
Thing. So I would still charge him $2 for beers, because it's kind of a faded...
Well, and he tried.
Yeah. It's the
effort
that counts.
It was the... You're right. See, Colin's nicer than me. I'm like, F that. That's a bad test. You got to get that right before you get your discount.
Wait, you got to pay double for beer and pay to get the ink redone.
Yeah. Yes. And you'll probably also have to work for me, too.
Yeah.
Give some job to him as well.
Yeah, right. No, Rob lives really two blocks
thing.
From here, so we could get him down here.
Terrence, we might be getting that thing done today. All right, we're going to take us a quick break, and when we come back, more from Colin Kaminsky, and we're going to talk about brewing consistency. We'll get Tasty up here to help out, and of course, Doc and Colin. So hang in there. It's the session live from Downtown Joe's.
Nice.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial. And now, Northern Brewer brings you another installment of The Time Brewers. When last we left our heroes, they found themselves in 19th century Burton-upon-Trent.
Ah, Merry England!
Something is amiss, my friends. Be on guard.
Are these casks of white Zinfandel withstand the Queen's men in good stead in far Bangalore?
Oh, hell no! Blush wine out of Britain be worse than microwaving a kitten. Maharaja Dodgers drinking pink be vomiting predominant on the subcontinent.
Oh, dear, you can't drink blush with Vindaloo.
Oi, what should I do? Ship hog's heads of this high carbonate water?
No, sir. Please, wait just a moment.
Well, bless me. A parcel from the future, from one northern brewer.
Use this Malice Auteur, my good man.
EKG at a high rate per barrel make ladies wet like Colin Farrell. Now quit Burton ruining the Burton Union and get Burton brewing.
Forgettest thou not the bog myrtle?
Northern Brewer is your one-stop homebrew supplier throughout the entire Fermento Chronosphere. The widest selection of quality malt, hops, yeast, $7.99 flat rate shipping, and keep that nasty-ass bog myrtle inside your sackcloth, Brother Abelard.
My stars, but this India Pale Ale is better than wine. Thanks, Time Brewers. Thanks, Northern Brewer.
Our work here is done, my friends. Now, to wherever we are next needed.
Tune in next time for the continuing adventures of The Time Brewers.
Keeping the ass out of Brewcast.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. Live from Downtown Joe's once again, having us a good time out here. And one of the best things about coming out to our live shows, I gotta say, probably the best thing, is not the show that we do, it's the people that come and hang out with us. And we get a lot of homebrewers that come in here, a lot of our listeners, and they bring their homebrew. I'm probably not supposed to say that, Colin, but they do bring their homebrew.
But nobody drinks it.
No, and, we look at it.
Yeah, we look at it.
They look at the color.
Right. And we talk about
it's
it.
It's like wine. You like, and spit it out.
Yeah, we don't even. Yeah, it's like wine tasting. Exactly. But it's really cool because these guys come out here now and feel comfortable giving us their beer. And I've got two really damn good examples of homebrew in front of me.
Good.
And here is. I want you guys to taste this. There's a glass right there. Give that one to Colin. And Doc, you don't mind my cooties, so you can have that one.
You've been camping all week.
That's true. But I showered last night,
okay. So
and I brushed, don't worry.
Sweet.
I brushed twice today, as a matter of fact. So Joe came out and gave me this beer, and let me tell you a couple things about it. It's his first all-grain beer that he's done. All right, now he's done extract for a while, but it's his first all-grain beer.
Who's with Joe?
Where is Joe? There, yeah, right
hey,
there.
Joe.
Okay, so he comes up. By the way, let's just, the balls. He's like, hey, my first beer, you want it? Yeah, that's great. A lot of listeners are really kind of
I know
shy
he gave it to
about
you first.
The first. Well, sure. Justin will drink anything.
I will too. So
it's an espresso red porter. He was going for more of an actual porter, but it came out kind of red. But he put 12 shots of espresso in the boil in the last 2 minutes of the boil. And when he said that to me, I hadn't tasted it yet. I thought, wow, that's a shit heap of espresso, right? That's a lot, but you can hardly taste it.
But in 10 gallons.
In 10 gallons. Yeah. In a 10-gallon batch. But you can hardly... It's subtle enough.
It's there.
I like that it's got a little roast to it, but it's right. Not too much. Anyway, I was just impressed with the beer. I thought you guys might like to try it.
Yeah, I can taste the espresso in it.
It's, you can?
It's got a little something on my... Yeah, it adds to the mouthfeel quite a bit. It's smooth. It kind of like... kind of like oats do. It kind of adds some slickness to it.
I'd call it an Irish red and not show anybody the recipe. Nobody'd notice.
And no one would know the difference, right?
Yeah.
But it's clean, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's really clean, and it's got a really nice residual sweetness that backs up the espresso bitterness.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
First all-grain brew, so good job, man. I think good things are kind of come out of Joe.
Thumbs up. Next week, you'd be dancing contemporary.
Now, the other beer I have in front of me, I'm sorry, I didn't write down the name. Mike gave me. By the way, if you ever can't remember somebody's name, it's usually Mike.
I don't know if you guys noticed that. Or Dave.
Yeah, it's like Mike or Dave. There's always 10 Mikes. And so Mike gave me his, it's a Moose Drool clone.
That's this one.
That I guess he's altered a little bit.
Yeah.
And since they're not a sponsor, I don't mind saying that it is way better than Moose Drool. It's a really nice beer. And he kind of backed off on the roast, I think.
That's what he said. Yeah, too much roast for him the first round.
Yeah.
This isn't even the fourth one you've done?
Several batches.
How many batches have you done of this to tweak it?
This is the second one. And you're an all-grain brewer, Mike. Yeah, okay. And I thought he did a great job on this.
Yeah.
Do you want to try that, Colin? If you don't mind my cooties.
Well, when he offered me two, you want some more?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, it's complex, I think. There's a lot going on there. The malt is really awesome. And some good homebrew here today.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So this is the fun part about coming out to our live shows. I think you guys should do it. I know Tasty enjoys when the listeners share the beer with him. It's your favorite part, right?
I've had both these beers already.
No, sorry. You did already have both.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Tasty's all about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Tasty's APA is really nice today, too.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
You didn't share your beer with me, Tasty? You brought Colin?
Well, I came up here and I poured Doc and...
Everybody?
Everybody won, except your glass is full. You didn't have another glass. So.
This is kind of a well-kept secret of homebrewers. When I go to a homebrewing conference, the first thing I do is walk up to Mike and say, do you have any of your APA? And I get a whole pint. And then I walk around and I talk to everybody, and my glass is never empty.
Right.
And I talk to everybody, and then when somebody tells me I really have to try something, I do.
I see.
Because the best beers and the worst beers I've ever had in my life have been homebrewed.
I agree with that sentiment entirely. And we've talked about that. We've also talked about over the last few years, homebrew's really gotten a lot better. And homebrewers have gotten a lot better.
Why is that?
That's definitely true. I think information.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about getting the word out about good beer.
Right.
I mean, I've only been around for 12 years now. The difference between now and 12 years ago is stunning.
It's night and day, right?
Yeah.
I would say the difference between now and 5 years ago, to me, because that's when I started tasting homebrew, is also stunning.
Yep. You know, 12 years ago, Doc was making good beer. Tasty was making good beer. Jameel was making good beer. George Fix was making good beer.
Yeah.
And there were 5,000 people that were making crappy beer.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there were others, but those were the four people that every time they handed me a beer, you know, that they were good.
Yeah,
and in fact, the best beer I've ever tasted in my life was a George Fix Pilsner.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I remember that time. It was rare to get a good beer. It was so common to get one that was just something wrong with it.
Or just kind of mediocre, like, oh, well, this wasn't really well thought out.
Yeah. Nothing remarkable. Yeah.
Right.
Here, I made this. Can you taste this?
And now people give you a beer, and it's like, oh, wow. What was in that again?
Right. Doc took me to my first homebrew festival, and it was I did not walk away from that festival feeling like there were a lot of good homebrewers. I had a lot of bad beer that weekend. And now when I go to festivals, it's really changed. It seems to me that more often than not, I'm getting good beer. And I really enjoy that, too. And by the way, just so you know, listeners, Tasty would actually quit if you stopped bringing homebrew to these events. He doesn't want to even be here if you're not sharing your beer with him. So please keep it up, and thank you guys for doing that.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to share. So many people are like, oh, it's not worthy.
Well,
it's worthy, believe me.
Every beer I've had here tonight has been great.
So. Well, but then there's the other half of that. If I was going to give Mike a beer, it would be the one that I like the least. Because he's the one who's going to help me fix it. And you know, if you're embarrassed about your big mistakes, you're not going to fix them. What you really need to do is get your mistakes in the hands of people that can help you improve.
Right.
And say, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
And so don't be ashamed of your bad beers. Your bad beers are training lessons. You know, they're tools that are going to train you how to be a better brewer.
So Colin, I
get Jameel to taste bad beers all the time.
I heard that.
Hey, Jameel, I hate this beer. What went wrong?
What did I do? Well, Colin's ego doesn't get in the way of his beer, and I think that's important.
Wow. That's how you make better beer?
Yeah.
That's the only way to make better beer.
So I did, believe it or not, Colin, the National Homebrew Conference that was in Minnesota, they asked me to be a lecturer this past year, and I didn't know what the hell I was going to talk about, because I can't teach anybody anything.
anything. But what I thought was, I learn everything from talking to people like you and Doc and Tasty. Everything I learned about brewing, I learned from you, was the topic, right? And one of the main points I was making was that you need to have a bit of a thick skin and not worry about it so much. And just what you said, you need to share your bad beer.
Yep.
Why keep making the same bad beer when somebody can tell you, hey, all you got to do is X, or the one thing that you were missing was X, and you're never going to, you know, find that out if you just keep making the bad beer and drinking it at home.
Yeah, especially if you've been tasting your beer for the fifth batch. You kind of become numb of what it is.
We call that house palate.
Yeah.
You get house palate.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't pick out the nuances of, oh, what can make this better? You're missing that X factor.
Right. Now, there are those of you out there, I think, that there are certain homebrewers who have wonderful palates, and they have a really keen ability to be self-critical. And they can get their beer, I think, really close to great on their own because
sure.
They're self-critical, they're tasting it right. But it's not most of you.
Yeah.
Most of you need to share, most of us, I should say, we need to share our beer.
I'm certainly not one of them. If it wasn't for the help of really gifted tasters, I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am.
Yeah. I've heard, Colin, if you don't mind me saying, that over the years, your beer has just skyrocketed in quality.
I hope so.
And I think it's because you're always asking.
If not, I'm wasting my time.
Right.
That's on display here tonight. All your beers I've had have been great.
What did you have Scott bring us here? I've had your pale ale all night, which I always love.
You know, this is the amber ale, and it's kind of the bottom of the tank, so it's probably not the best part of the tank, but I did want to overhop you because I know you. I can overhop you.
Yes,
bottom of the
quickly.
Barrel.
By
yeah,
the way,
yeah, this is a fine beer.
You have fined it. How did you fine it?
I've been using only the Biofine Clear.
That's new for you.
That's new for me. New. It's about 70 batches old for me. So about
2 weeks.
About 12 months.
Okay.
It's about 12 months old.
Okay.
And
we don't count the first 3 months because that's the learning period anyway. So.
You know what? It worked perfect the first time I used it, and it took me about 5 batches to get the dosage where I really liked it.
You used to have to add a combination of different finings to get?
I on some of the beers, on the really hoppy beers, lots of dry hop beers,
yeah.
I had to add 2 finings, and I don't anymore. And instead of spending 45 minutes finding, I can find in 5 minutes.
With just this one?
With just this one product.
How did you hear about this?
And this product is kosher.
Oh, is that right?
Which my old product wasn't.
Scott likes that. The finding he's using is kosher. This beer is good for you. Yeah, Scott's our only Jew.
Yeah, so. I get vegans, I get vegetarians, and I get kosher people that really have specific dietary requirements. And, you know, using the swim bladders from sturgeon offended some people.
But what else are you going
to
use them for?
I don't have to do that anymore. So.
I mean, you're just laying there. What else are you going to use them for?
Right, on the ground. Well, so I'm just always curious because I know you're always looking for different ways to...
I actually Nick Campbell over at Blue Frog had called me up years ago saying I was having a bunch of issues with fining, and they told me I'm using the exact same findings you are. Can I come visit your brewery and fine with you? And I said, well, I can, but I can't imagine what I'm doing is worth a trip. So let me tell you exactly what I'm doing and what I'm thinking about. And I tell him about 5 or 7 minutes worth of what I do and why I do it. And he says, that's exactly what I do, and I'm getting really inconsistent results. And I said, you know, I don't really know how to help you then, and you're wasting a trip.
I see.
And he says, well, thank you for that advice, and I don't hear from him for a year and a half. And they discontinued the product I used. And so I called him up, and I said, you know, you never called me up with any more questions. What did you end up doing?
Oh.
He says, oh, I found this Biofine Clear. It's easy. It works fast. It's great.
Okay.
So I switched to it. The next batch of beer I brewed.
And he loved it.
And I've never gone back.
Now, can we get that as homebrewers? Or that
in drums?
You know, I buy it by the gallon.
Okay.
Which is enough to do about 1,000 gallons of beer.
Wow.
But I have heard that there are people repackaging it.
Okay.
Because I've recommended it to other people, and they've said, oh, I found that. It works great.
Okay.
So people are using it in 5-gallon batches, and it is working.
I'm just trying to find ways to convince Tasty to stop filtering, just because I've decided mission.
I have made it my mission as well. This year, this is my time of year to change my brewing process.
Okay.
And now I'm going to start doing more gelatin beers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And I don't use any gelatin. Try Biofine.
I'll try the Biofine.
I think it is
available at home breweries now.
Yeah, it's a silicate.
It's under a different name, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a silicate. So if you give me the chemistry of anything, I can tell you. What it is it's...
of course you can.
It's water glass. If you give me an MSDS, I can tell you if it's the same thing. It's water glass that's been made colloidal and held in a suspension of... I think it's food-grade glycol is what they suspend it in.
Huh.
And it will not settle. It doesn't matter how long you keep the stuff, it will not settle. You drop it in beer, and in 2 hours, bam, it's crashed.
Wow.
I mean, it's fast.
Yeah, I'll use that, and I'm going to probably do less filtering. I'll let you know how that turns out.
I'm going to try it.
I'm going to come back.
You're making my job easy, Taze. I got to have something to argue with you about for the next year.
Yeah, really.
You say that it's your time of the year to change your brewing process.
What does that mean, Tasty? Well, there's no competitions coming up.
I see.
No reason to like hold the process constant.
It's a slack season.
I'm brewing for consumption kind of now.
Okay.
Beers I'd like to drink.
Play around.
Yeah, make some changes and stuff.
Okay.
His kids are drinking age.
Yeah.
But you know, it starts up pretty in the fall. Like for there's stuff that comes up. I got to stop.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I see. The funny thing about this is Tasty will give me the beer that he's fined as opposed to the filtering one, and I won't even notice the difference. I just like to yell him about it for no reason.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Well, we can still do that.
We can still do that. Okay. Good. You can tell me
it's
that
a stick here we do, isn't it?
Though,
I mean, is it?
Yeah.
Come on.
Right? It is, right?
I find filtering changes your hop characteristics a lot, and it's the brightest, freshest flavors that get lost.
Yeah, but you've had Tasty's hoppy beers.
I have.
You had some today?
I'm just saying, I've also filtered a lot of beers.
Right.
And the brightest, freshest, those metallic, light up your eyes hop flavors are the ones that go first.
The first to go.
We need to do some more side-by-sides with that. I'd like to do some myself. I don't do much of that.
Yeah.
I actually have a... Because I'm brewing like an extra 5 gallons because I need more beer, typically lighter beers, and that one's not getting filtered. So I'm able to do some more side-by-side. So I'm like, I'm open to that concept, and it may be true. I'm going to see if I can do it sensory-wise myself.
So what I found is not only did it lower the hop character, but it changed the hop quality.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just kind of like, I can get really nice flavors out of pellets.
Yeah,
and I can get really nice flavors out of flowers, but they're different.
Right. Well, so what I preach is that the hops attach themselves to that yeast you see in suspension. And I don't really want those attached. Now, you're saying you might be saying, well, that's where all the flavor is. So don't take it out of my beer.
Now we're going to run down a technical road for really quick. Okay, so...
Why shouldn't we do technical here?
So there's some really interesting studies that are coming out now. And one of them is that if we add hops while yeast is still active,
okay,
that they're actually creating brand new esters that aren't available in the brewing process in any other way. And so there are people now, Sierra Nevada is one of them, that are adding hops towards the end of fermentation specifically so they can get more hop character by using less dry hops.
Well, Firestone Walker's doing that. You got that.
And it's all coming out of the same study, and it was all funded by Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, and this is going to amaze you. This is the first time I know what the hell Colin is talking about. I know of this article. I read some of it myself. Yeah.
And it's absolutely phenomenal.
Went right over your head.
Of course, but I just want to corroborate. Colin is right. There we go.
It's absolutely phenomenal study, and I talked to the kid who wrote the paper for about 2 years before he published it. And went over a lot of the details, and he's just one of these kids who just wants to figure everything out and doesn't want to take time to write the paper.
Okay.
And everybody kept telling him, no, you got to write this down, you got to write this down. And he was given lectures to the Northern California Homebrewers Conference, so he was trying to disseminate the information, but he didn't want to write it down.
Right.
And finally, Gil Sanchez over at Sierra Nevada, who's head of R&D there, just said, look, it was part of your job, publish a paper.
Yeah.
And he put this paper out.
Thanks for sharing.
And it's a phenomenal bit of research. One of the things he found was a hop aroma in Centennial that if you add it towards the end of fermentation while it's active, you get a cedar quality. Not available in any other hop or any other addition time.
Okay.
Only at the end of fermentation.
Now, wow. Tasty, this is something that you do anyway, isn't it? Don't you dry hop before fermentation is done?
Yeah, I do it not because of any science that I invented before anybody else.
Right.
But just because my concept is Well, I'm adding oxygen when I add the hops, because the pellets themselves have oxygen impregnated in them. So I want some fermentation available to, like, take up that oxygen.
You want the yeast active in that phase
to clean it up.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
You know, that's funny. I was training somebody this week, and that was one of the things I brought up. Even though it isn't one of the reasons why I leave a little bit of yeast active, it was like, you know, and this is another good side effect of it, is it will pull the oxygen out and try to use it if there's some yeast in suspension. But I know brewers who are very successful who are doing the exact opposite. They are actually filtering first and then dry hopping.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Specifically, sure. So they don't waste dry hops on the yeast.
Yeah, they don't get absorbed by the yeast.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, what happens to me is the yeast coats the pellet, and then I don't extract very well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a physical barrier. It makes a physical barrier to the flavors coming up.
I'm amazed we learned something on a Colin Kaminsky show. This never happens, right?
Which usually is so pretty far above us.
Not pretty bland, usually.
No, this is great. It always happens with these shows. I love coming here.
We are going to have the glucoside show one day.
You are going to make me do it, aren't you?
I really am.
Well, you better get Doc on the same page, because I'm just going to be glazed over.
Jameel's trying to write the book on hops, so he's going to have to learn this.
I see.
Because if it's not in the book on hops, so we're going to have to get Jameel, Doc, and I on the same page, because I don't think any of us really quite understand because these guys are organic chemists that walk up with a wireframe model of a molecule and say, see?
Right.
No. No, I don't understand.
Yeah. Just being a radio show, you can't do that.
It's going to be difficult,
And I literally was in a conversation with three of these guys, all had PhDs in organic chemistry, and they're looking at this one wireframe model of an organic molecule, and they all just said, oh, I get it.
Right.
And I'm sitting there feeling, you know, like I'm six.
Yeah. Oh, you got that extra alkyl group on the end. Oh, you put it over there. Yeah.
Welcome to my life, Colin.
Yeah.
My whole life has been, even at community college, I had that glazed over.
That was a tough dinner for me to sit in, because I wanted to totally derail the conversation and say, okay, get me up to speed.
Right.
But I couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, because they were obviously having epiphanies between each other. But I was lost.
Right.
Oh, you just, half you guys don't know what the other half is talking about, and I don't know anything, so just fill me in.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, they would have just said, go back to school.
Yeah.
Take a class in
OPEM,
and then we'll talk to you, you know.
And I have a gun.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start our topic about brewing consistency. It's something that...
We all have these little blue notes, too.
We do?
Yeah.
Oh, are these my questions from the chat room, Bevo?
Whoever is asking in the chat room about my book on water, it's going well. John and I have kind of divided up what we're writing. And right now I'm working on a chapter called Why a Book on Water.
That should be this introduction that nobody reads. But it should be the introduction.
I'm hoping it's nobody reads it.
Well, nobody reads the introduction.
The water question.
They go right to the meat of the book.
The water question was from the chat. That question is from this gentleman in the red shirt.
Okay. Now, the one in my hand is from the gentleman in the red shirt. I think what it says is why did Colin say that the bottom of the barrel, the amber that we're drinking, was not the stuff that you wanted us to have? His impression was that maybe that would be like the concentrated goodness of the beer, and we would like the bottom of the barrel.
The way my serving tanks work is I get to pour 82% of it off from a sample port. And when I'm down to the last 18%, I switch to a bottom fitting. And all of the yeast and hops that I find out of it are sitting on that bottom layer. So as we pour it out of the faucet, even though it's not enough to affect the clarity, there's a little tiny bit of yeast streaming into each glass. And it tastes a little bit bready. It's a little bit different than the way it tastes at the top of the tank. So I prefer it when it comes out of the sample port compared to when it comes out of the bottom.
I can tell when it's a yeasty flavor, when little boys are still in there.
Well, and it's a little harsher than it usually is. Your amber's usually pretty malty and smooth, and I think when you have some junk in it, it's kind of harsh.
There's a bite.
Yep, and that's probably things, you know, a hot bitterness that the yeast has grabbed onto.
Okay.
And actually, when you're sitting there pouring it, it'll run like perfect, and then you'll see this little tiny, like, not even a tenth of an ounce that'll come through that's all bubbly.
I see.
And you know the yeast is in that spot and that the CO2 nucleized, used as nucleation sites. And what is the verb for that? And, and you can actually see when a little tiny piece of yeast tears through. And it's not enough to affect clarity, but I can taste it.
Well, so let me ask you this, in defense of Tasty. This is the one time I'll do it for you. As a commercial brewer, isn't that costing you money? Wouldn't you be able to serve more of your beer if you filtered? Because you could serve every last drop and know that it's the best beer
that
you have.
That it's more consistent?
Yeah, I could. Then you could. But you don't care.
No,
Colin does care.
Right, yeah, what I want is a fresh, live product. I like it that it's a little bit different every day.
Okay.
What I want it to be is different. I want it to be different every day because it's fresh and delicious. Okay. I don't want it to be different every day because I make a mistake every day. And then there's a big difference in my mind.
He'd love it if they ran through it in 4 days and it was at its peak.
Right.
And he would tweak it to be at its peak and just run through it, and now he gets to do the next thing.
Sure.
Well, and this particular flavor, I'm running through 12 days a tank right now. Wow. So I'm running through 1,780 pints every 12 days.
People
of this
love your amber. Mm-hmm. It's a good beer.
Yeah. It's my number two selling beer.
What's your number one, the pale?
The wheat.
Oh, your wheat. That's right.
Yeah, the wheat's the number one selling beer, and I'm using 1,780 pints every 9 days.
Wow. He knows exactly how many pints.
Right?
Yes.
Well, 1,780 is in seven barrels. That's another way of saying seven barrels.
Okay. All right, let's do this. It's time to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about brewing consistency. Right. We're going to do it with Colin. We're going to do it with Tasty. We're going to do it with Doc. Each one of them is going to tell us a little bit about how they go for consistent brewing and some tips and tricks that we can do it at home also. So hang in there. We're live from Downtown Joe's, and always fun to be here, Colin. Thanks for having us, as always. And stick with us. When we come back, consistent brewing, both at Downtown Joe's and at home. We'll be right back. It's The Session.
Listening to the Brewcasters.
Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. Seven Bridges has the best selection of organic ingredients, including over 27 varieties of organic hops at breworganic.com. Join their mailing list for special deals and regular updates. They've been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for 13 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. And Seven Bridges is the proud host of the 4th Annual National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Take the challenge this fall for a chance to win great prizes, including stainless steel brew kettles and organic brewing ingredients. This year, the challenge will be judged in two locations, on the East Coast at Capital City Brewing in Arlington, Virginia, and on the West Coast at Gordon Biersch in San Jose, California. For complete details, visit breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to great beer and people-friendly business practices. They offer environmentally friendly, fair trade, and fair wage brewing products whenever possible. Seven Bridges, breworganic.com.
San Francisco. Wow. San Francisco. Wow.
right, cans. Cans. Tasty packs. Local neighborhood brew pub.
Hi.
Well,
I'm Sean O'Sullivan.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck. Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're out here live at Downtown Joe's in Napa. We've done more remotes here than anywhere else on Earth. You know that, Colin?
You know, I just love radio, so getting you guys out of the studio is kind of fun for me. It's kind of the way I torture you.
I was just going to say, it's because you like to watch me squirm, dick. I did, however, go use the restroom at the break, and you're right, it sounds great in the bathroom. Yeah. I mean, I probably sound like a real broadcaster if someone's taking a leak right now.
Yeah, you know, the bathroom outside sounds really good. The problem is this room is...
I do, Bevo.
We took the sound baffles down to do the retrofit.
I see.
And they don't fit back anymore.
Oh. You have to figure that out.
Yeah, I need a seamstress. So if anybody out there is a seamstress and they want to trade beer to stitch some canvas for me, let me know.
What if you just took these canvas hop bag looking things and actually filled them back up with hops? Would that be a sound barrier?
Well, the
it
problem...
smell good.
What we need is big horizontal things. And we have these big foam-filled horizontal things that hang down 4 feet from those beams.
I see.
And they work great. They just take all the echoes out of this room.
You know, a lot of restaurants and breweries have that problem. We have a local brewery in our area that the sound drives me nuts in. You can't have a conversation sitting next to each other if there's this many people in the room.
Well, you know, tile and glass is great because it's really easy to clean, and granite and all those things, but it's not very good for sound.
No, and restaurant owners generally don't, it's an afterthought, right? Guys like you and me who have done sound before, we go, oh no, it's a forethought, but
right,
you know.
I gotta say one thing. Using the waterless bathroom in there just a second ago.
How fun was that?
We sound awesome in
it's
there.
It's good in there, right?
It's so awesome in there. It's clear.
Yeah.
There's no reverberation. It's
right.
If I had a chair, I'd just sit in there.
Yeah, so note to the room, if you really want to hear the show, just go hang out in the bathroom.
Oh,
crowd around the stall.
It's nice.
Yeah. We're going to put a webcam in there.
It's a good sound.
Well, no, that's illegal, I think.
So I got another couple.
No, it turns out, because I had to do some research on this, it isn't illegal.
Of course you did. It's not illegal?
It's not illegal.
If I worked here, I'd do the same
research.
To put
a webcam in the bathroom is not illegal.
And you don't even have to tell anybody it's there.
What?
Yep.
You just can't sell it.
It's not illegal. Same reaction as me.
Yeah.
Why is that not illegal?
I have no idea.
But it's not.
You know, we wanted to put a security camera. We used to have problems with security because there used to be a line to the men's room.
Okay.
And we'd have problems with security in the line. And the problem was the best place to put the camera actually could look in the door when the door was open.
Okay.
And we were wondering if that was illegal.
Sure.
And they're like, no, there's no restrictions at all.
Wow.
You can put a camera anywhere you want.
Can I see the
tapes? You might get sued at some point.
Right. And then they'll make a law.
Yeah. Right. But there is no law currently that says where you can't do security
good
in your own building.
Know. Good to know. Good to know.
DowntownJoesBathrooms.com.
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing.
You know, there was a restaurant in town that got busted for sharing videos of the employee changing room online.
Is that yeah. right? We don't clap for that, people? That was awesome.
They got into really big trouble.
Oh, yeah. You're on YouTube now.
Yeah, right. Probably, yeah.
So I got another listener beer shared with me at the break here. Greg came up and gave me his Scottish 80.
Oh, I have that.
Is this one. And then the second version is his Scottish 80, but he took, and this is why I like this beer, he took his oak chips and he soaked them in Johnny Walker Red for 6 months or something. And Johnny Walker Red was my old man's beverage. Not because he didn't want Johnny Walker Black, but because Johnny Walker Red was cheaper, right? The Dead Dad.
Dead Dad was all
about the Johnny Walker. Now, Johnny Walker Blue, if you bought it for him, he was all, you know, he loved it. But as his regular, you know, evening drink, it was Johnny Walker Red. So Greg here took oak chips and soaked them in Johnny Walker Red for 6 months. Then he took the oak chips and he put them in the keg for about a month and a half. So, Colin, this is the Scottish 80 before the oak chips. And then this other glass here is the Scottish 80 post-Johnny Walker oak chips. I would name this beer after my dad if it were my beer, for my old man. He'd love it. I still have his ashes. They're in a Johnny Walker Red bottle right now.
Are they really?
No. But I did, like, you got to, like, figure out.
So delightful.
I don't even think gullible's in the dictionary. So.
Yes. Well, although you're not that gullible, I thought, because, you know, you always try to do, everybody does something personal when someone dies, right?
Right.
Well, I bought a fifth. Is that the small one? Is that called a fifth of Johnny Walker Red?
No, the pint.
And,
there's a little tiny pint.
I got the little
pint. The one you get at 7-Eleven when you're trying to get over to your girlfriend's house.
Half pint. Yeah.
Half pint. That's
half
what I
pint.
Yeah. So I
we're going way down. Okay.
Because I'm cheap, and even though he was dead, I was like, well, he wouldn't want me to waste a whole bottle. So I bought the small bottle, the thin one, and I took it down to Lake Havasu, and I poured it out for him. And then I made the joke, you know what? This should be his urn. I'm going to put his ashes back in this bottle. And I said it to my mom. I was trying to make light of the situation, which probably wasn't the smartest thing I did. Well, she was like, yeah, sure, that's cool. And I'm like, Mom, this is a joke. I'm not going to put Dad back in a Johnny Walker bottle. Whatever you want to do, honey.
Stuff a cigar butt in there.
Yeah. It'll be fine. A whole pack of them. Anyhow, so I thought this beer was interesting. What do you think, Colin? Can you taste the Johnny Walker Red?
Absolutely.
You can.
Oh, yeah.
I thought so, too. And now, the aroma of it, I could only actually get the oak from the chips.
No, I get whiskey, too.
You got whiskey, too.
Yeah, it tastes like whiskey oak. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not quite as strong as, like, the Firestone Parabola.
Yeah.
Which is real strong whiskey flavors, but I pick up the whiskey and the aroma, yeah.
I told him to just hold on to it because that oak thing will fall off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be really, really nice. Right now, it's all right in your face.
Yeah, it's all American oak right in your face.
All right in your face.
I had the beer earlier, I definitely noticed it seemed more vanilla than oaky to me, which I liked.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a French oak quality, but boy, this certainly smells like American oak to me.
I think it's just a measure of how much he actually put in.
Okay.
To me, French oak
smells just like vanilla.
Yeah. And it's very spicy, so.
I think at lower percentages, the Western might as well be more vanilla, too.
With me, when I taste oaked beers, I prefer to find that vanilla character than I do the harsher oak character.
Then use French oak.
So you're like a Francophile.
Then use French oak. Yeah.
Which makes sense. I do like the French. Yeah, I like their cheese, everything.
And this beer, because of the vanilla, I got like a chocolate flavor. Because, you know, vanilla and then the sweetness makes like, and the grossness in the beer gives you like a chocolate effect.
It's nice. Yeah.
Definitely.
I'll give a free plug to since I mentioned cheese real quick. Paxton turned me on to this cheese. So we have a local to the Bay Area, Cowgirl Creamery. You've all heard of this cheese place. They make wonderful cheese. And they make this cheese that's called Red Hawk. And it's the stinkiest, creamiest, butteriest American-made cheese I've ever had, and it's effing amazing. And they're not paying for this plug right now. I'm just giving props where respect is due. If you like stinky cheese, it's expensive. It's about $20 a small wheel at the whole paycheck, Whole Foods. But it's an amazing effing cheese. So that's just my personal plug.
Who brewed this?
This was from Greg.
Greg,
who's here. Greg. I think Greg is the dad of Brewer. The little baby.
Greg, great beer.
Oh, they're liking your beer. Okay.
Yeah, that's delicious.
Got more.
Yeah, that's really good. I like both of them. I like them both. Yeah, I got two glasses.
I got to be honest, even though I like the props for my dad with the Johnny Walker, I prefer the Scottish 80. I prefer the base beer. I think it's a nice, clean, easy drinking beer. And the other one gets a little too, I don't know, maybe just a little too scotchy for me.
I normally don't finish oaky beers.
Okay.
And that one I not only finished, but I was wishing there was more in my glass.
Right.
I liked it. I think it was oaked really well.
Well, thanks, Greg, for sharing, and thanks to Joe, and thanks to Mike, all you guys for bringing beer out. One, it gives us something to talk to the listeners about, and it keeps Tasty coming to the shows.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Best thing on the world is sharing homebrew with the guy that brewed it, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. Our beer topic for the day, although we've come through some wonderful ones already, we're going to talk about brewing consistency, which I don't care about. but you guys do, and I can understand why. And Tasty's been very successful by being able to reproduce his homebrew. Doc gets a kick out of being able to do it. It challenges his brain, and I think he's produced some wonderful beer at it. And it sounds to me, Colin, like you've started to really understand the need to brew consistently here.
Yeah, I think consistency is the biggest battle of any brewer, and I got really lucky when back before I was a professional brewer, I used to come in here and brew one day a week, and the first 9 batches of beer I made was the same recipe, and it was such a good lesson, and that was when I really realized, okay, what I need to be focused all the time. How do I make sure that I stir the mash in the same way every time? Really? I do everything as a mechanical person. Because I'm a mechanical part of this brewery.
Right.
And if I do something different, it changes things. And so the beginning of consistency for me was what do I do every day?
Okay.
You got to calibrate what you do, too. You got to do it the same way every time.
Yep. Do it the same way every time. Right. And be able to measure. If you can't measure it, you can't fix it.
Okay.
So you have to be able to measure how consistent you are, or you can't fix it. And then that was one of the really big keys for me, is learning that A, my body affects how this process works, because it's a very physical brewery, and B, if I can't measure it, I can't fix it.
Okay. Now, before we get into the techniques of doing it, let me ask you guys this, and especially as a home brewer, but Colin, you can certainly chime in too. Why? Why brew consistently? Isn't part of the fun of craft beer and microbrew that I can come into your brewery and get a different beer than I had the last time? Don't I just want a Bud Light if I want a consistent beer? So tell me why.
How about I just want to brew beer? Because then every beer is your first beer. You just became a home brewer and you want to brew a beer. You brew a beer and you don't know if it's good, if it's bad. You like it because you brewed it.
Right.
If you change everything every time,
you can't do it again.
It's going to be new every time.
Okay.
You're not going to get better that way.
I like it when a home brewer comes into the brewery and they say, hey, could you taste this beer? I don't really quite like the recipe. And you taste it and it's like, well, how many times have you brewed the recipe?
Once.
Oh, well, this is the first time.
Yeah.
Well, then how do you know your process variables are the same?
Okay.
Because you don't. Until you've done, I only make big recipe changes in the middle of summer, because I am brewing beer so fast that I can have 3 or 4 batches of the same beer on hand at any given moment, and I can taste them, and I can say, okay, this is this recipe change, this is that recipe change, this is that recipe change. I know I'm doing everything the same because I'm too busy to do anything different.
Right.
And then I can change recipes. In the winter, I can change big process things, make big changes, like redesign my mash tun or redesign some big part of the process. In the summer, I can just do recipe changes and try. And what I'll do is I'll do progressive changes on the recipe, and then I'll do one batch that goes all the way back to the original.
Okay.
And then I'll see what I like better. And because I'm doing 105 batches a year, it gives me a huge shot at doing changes, but only when I'm brewing really often. If I'm only brewing twice a week, it's really hard to make recipe changes.
Because you can't tell the difference then.
Because you forget.
Without doing a side-by-side. Okay.
Yeah, you forget.
Okay.
You know, the one batch goes off, the new batch goes on, you're like, I think I like this better, but so, you forget.
Well, I get how can I make this better? And if you're brewing it different every time, you're brewing it with different water, you're brewing it at a different place, whatever, you really can't nail it down to what it is. You have to. I'm a big thing for changing one parameter. If you're brewing consistently, say, I've been brewing for 4 or 5 years all grain, I pretty much know you're doing it the same way every time. You haven't changed your system, you haven't moved, you haven't changed your water. And let's change your brewing process or the recipe. We don't change both. We don't say, let's move your mash temperature up or down. Let's
do a decoction mash and then change the recipe brew it once.
We're not going to change a whole lot of stuff.
Okay.
What do you want to change about this? Well, I'm not sure, or I want more malty, or I'm not getting the hop characteristics I want out of it.
Okay.
And then we got to go into process or recipe, and we're going to change one, maybe two things in this one. Otherwise, you're all over the board.
It's the only way to tell what you've changed.
Yeah, and it's the only way to improve your brewing process or your brewing background on this thing.
So when you come to this time of year, Tasty, like you said, it's the time that you start tweaking things.
Yeah.
Do you follow this philosophy where you only tweak one thing?
Well, you know, at this time of year, I could make more drastic changes because I'm not not really trying to make the same beer over and over again.
Okay.
So this is the time I can make maybe some bigger brush strokes. But I would rarely make anything of any major size, even small changes. The reason I'm all into consistency is that I want to be able to let recipe drive the end product, the beer.
Yeah.
So if I'm consistent in the process, at the appropriate, you know, process for that particular style, I mean, obviously I'll make a strong beer different than I would make a moderately strong
beer. He's not your average brewer. He knows his process. He knows his recipes.
Oh, yeah.
He can confidently go into it and change three things.
But it's not that hard to learn. Get your process nailed up.
But he's really confident on that. He can change three things.
The reason I'm good at this is I'm doubtful. I'm actually really, you know.
But there's three things you can change, and you will know what each of those three things did.
That's right, because you'll know this came from water, and this came from this.
Yeah. Right.
And this
but
came
I
from hops.
But you, I don't
but
brew
you,
enough
you would.
Or,
and
yeah.
So my advice is always we're going to change one thing.
So, Colin, when you're here and you're now trying to figure out how you can brew more consistent beer, what are a couple of things that you're focused on? If we can just kind of keep it, tips.
You know, it's funny. The simplest things that you can imagine turn out to be really important. Like, everybody's like, oh, well, I've got to hit my original gravity. Well, you really do have to hit your original gravity. That's really important. And even if you're doing the 250th version of that recipe, you still have to measure the original gravity. You still have to measure the final gravity. You still have to measure the mash pH. You still have to get all the basic parameters, and you have to get them measured. Because if they're not right, then you don't even know what change you made. So let's say I'm so confident in my process that I've decided, oh, my original gravities are all the same. I always get good efficiency. I don't need to measure it.
Yeah.
And I decide I'm going to change the malt bill. And that was the time that my OG changed. I'm not going to know that it wasn't the recipe. So you've got to measure all the things that everybody tells you to measure every time.
You really do
have to measure them every time.
Okay.
Even if they never change.
Well, I've made the same beer like back to back, and been caught by something as simple as the grain I used to make the second batch was a different crop, a different season,
different
analysis,
than
the previous. It's like unexplainable. And I go back to the home brew shop, and they say, "Well, These are new lots. I can tell by the ink they're different.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, I drink the Tasty APA all the time, beer I love, and I tasted this one, and it's like, oh, this is the first time I've had it with the 08 Simcoe.
Really? And I picked it up through for some reason.
Yeah, I picked it up right away. It was like, oh, this is 08 Simcoe. I like the 07 Simcoe better.
That's interesting.
You got to say
it's like a spice, you know, they vary by season.
Oh, yeah. They do a lot, too, especially the Simcoe 07, 08, 09.
That's interesting.
Well, Colin said something about you have to hit your OG. That's key. How did you get to your OG? What was your mash temperature?
Right.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And then how do you respond to that OG? For instance, if I'm 2 points over, I can say, well, I'm a 90-minute boiler. I'm going to do a 70-minute boil this time and still hit my final gravity.
I see.
Or I can, you know, say, well, I'll just make a little more beer and throw some away. So you can add more water, yep. Get that back down to its primary. It's a main starting point. But take action. The reason to take the measurement, so you got a chance to do something about
right.
it.
Right, because the earlier you fix something, the less likely it is to change the end product.
Yeah, you got more options.
But your OG could be changed from from mash temperature. You could get your OG, and it could be a lot of fermentables or not a lot of fermentables this time because you messed with your mash temperature.
Which is one of the reasons why you take a final gravity and calculate real degree of fermentability every batch.
I hit my OG and it didn't come down to my usual final gravity. Well, you changed a whole lot of things. You changed your mash temperature.
You mashed in at 160.
Yeah. Right. And then you're throwing ice water in and push it back down. You're doing fixes in mid brew.
You guys watched me brew last week. You were there.
Well, you know,
you can save a beer. Don't give up. You can save a beer that way. But we're talking about consistency here.
You can tell the way that Doc's talking. These things happen. I mean,
he's talking about
had these mistakes or for some reason
it
you're over. Some reason you ran out of propane and you got this stall in your boil. These are all just challenges that you need to apply.
Actually, one of the things I hate the most is a stall in my boil.
Yeah,
it's the hardest thing to fix for me.
Yeah, I just remember watching Apollo 13, and when only four of the engines out of five fire, and he goes, "That's our glitch for us."
Yeah.
And he clicks a switch, and they don't care.
Right,
and
it's expected. Yeah,
that's our glitch for this mission.
I do like that factor. And by the way, just for your stress level, factor in that things aren't going to go perfect.
Exactly,
it's a glitch,
It's all about how you deal with it.
I just click the switch and I move on.
Tasty, how do you deal with it, I wonder? Never mind.
No.
I'll leave it alone.
No, brewing itself is a rush on its. I mean, I don't need anything.
It's your Zen moment.
When it's over, then maybe.
then.
Then Zen can roll it.
Okay. So the numbers are, as much as I hate them, they're a crucial part of
numbers
marking.
Are crucial, and how do you get to these numbers?
Okay.
So your original gravity can be changed by a lot of factors.
Okay.
Tasty was talking about different crops, different mash temperatures.
Different sifts in the grain.
Different sifts in the grain.
Yeah, sometimes if my mill gap stays the same, and I'll get a brand new batch of grain.
Smaller kernels,
and
maybe.
And suddenly the kernels are smaller or larger.
Yeah.
And I've had stuck mashes, and I've had mashes that run off with low efficiency just because I didn't stick the paddle in the grain flow and go, oh, gosh, it's different this time.
Yeah. It's
so relax. Have a homebrew.
Right.
It's not the end of the world, but try to stick within those parameters to make it consistent.
Okay.
Get the results you want.
Yeah.
And the other thing I do here, which is you know, because we're talking about recipe changes, if I think, oh, you know, this is where I really want this flavor to go, and I think I'm going to be really happy if the recipe's like this, but that's just too different from what I'm making, then what I do is I make incremental changes to the recipe, and then somewhere between 3 and 5 batches later, I get to taste the recipe I really wanted to try, but I snuck it in so that my customers didn't notice me get there.
You've got people that
want the same beer every day.
They want to say, oh, I come in. The only reason I come in on Friday is to have your Tantric IPA.
Yeah.
Is somebody else brewing? Where's Colin?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm the one who stands there and defends each glass, too.
And I would be the same about your Dortmunder, Doc, or Tasty's APA. I would actually be angry with both of you if it didn't taste like I remembered it.
Yeah, I know.
So
yeah.
It is a case where you guys kind of want
to... I'm the same way with the APA.
When I go to bring the kettles out to make beer, I want the beer to be at the end, but I want it to be, so I...
Well, I got to make that beer. This was something that I was always fascinated about, and I know a lot of people do it, but you're just an example that was right in my face. You know, you'll make it to the second round of Nationals with whatever beer, his APA or something.
Yeah.
And rather than use the same batch in the second round of the competition as made it in the first round, which, of course, I and a lot of other homebrewers would do, it's a sure thing. It was right the first time. No. Tasty wants the fresh APA, so right. He brews it a second time because he's confident enough that he can make the same beer.
And nothing, of course, if there's no outside event, nothing unusual,
yeah,
I can make that
beer. He brews hoppy beers, and he knows what the flavor curve is on those.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what he's doing.
Yeah, that's why I'm rebrewing.
For other people that are brewing different beers, it's not as important.
Well, you know, I did the...
Yeah, it wouldn't be important if you're doing a whiskey barrel-aged, you know...
Yeah, exactly. And
I did redo my Dortmunder this year. It advanced in the fruit beer category, and the base beer was the Dortmunder.
Of course.
Yeah. But the judges said it was too hoppy, so I thought, well, I'll have a better chance if I make another batch and back down on the hops. So I did that.
And
it didn't place in the second round.
For the first time in like 30 years.
I got blanked out this year, yeah.
Well, and this will probably be my only consistency contribution to this conversation, but people ask me all the time, Justin, your beer really can't be that bad, right? It's not as bad as you guys say on the air. You listen to these guys talk about beer every week. You have first-hand information every single week. You must be able to make good beer. And actually, my answer is always, you know, I could probably tell you how to make a great beer.
Yeah.
I could probably give you all the information you need to make a great beer because I have heard it. But since I rarely ever brew, I'm not in practice.
Because repetition helps.
The repetition and the amount of times that Tasty has used his system over the last 6 months, and Doc too, even though I know you don't get to brew as much as you want, the amount of times you guys use your system is really what makes all the difference in the world, because I'm not in practice. So I can sit through my whole brew day and go, well, I effed that up, and I know what I'm screwing up, but because I'm not in practice, I'm not able to do it.
It took me a year when I changed over systems.
To get it right again.
To get comfortable.
Yeah.
That I could brew consistent.
Yeah.
Before, it was like, you know, I knew what I had to do, but it was nervousness hitting my numbers and everything else with this new system.
Well, so Nathan Smith, one of our favorite home brewers, we use him to brew some of our Can You Brew It beers on the Jamil and Tasty show. And we tap into a lot of home brewers to help us out. It's too much brewing. Well, Nathan he recently moved to a new house in a new city. And he took himself out of the loop because he knew he didn't have a handle on his process enough to do a cloned beer, because it's a very controlled clone that we're trying to do.
New water, new
he
everything.
He knew he would just be wasting his time.
He had to use some of his validation beers, his beers he knows.
Yeah.
He would brew those and then see what, you know, check the results.
To dial it back in
right,
again.
Exactly.
So I really think that repetition is key to consistency. You have to do this all the time.
Well, you know, you were saying at the beginning of this that you think the beers here have gotten better in the course of my stewardship of this brewery. I've done 850 batches of beer.
Wow.
On this system.
You're trying to say anybody can get it right after that many batches?
No, I'm saying I'm still learning, and that 850 might not even be enough. Really slow learner.
Well, we should always...
Colin, you're a little, you know...
No matter how good your beer is, you should always assume it could be better. I mean, why assume anything else?
Right.
You
may not know what to do, but you've got to...
As soon as you give up trying to make your beers better, they get worse.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
But if I challenged you, Colin, if I said, you know, I want to come in here and have the Oberon Pale Ale, I want you to put two batches side by side, and I want them to taste identical, you could do it.
As long as they were about the same age, I could.
Yeah. And knowing where the ingredients came from and the right batch and all of that, but you could do it.
If I brewed 2 days back-to-back, I bet you I couldn't. I could make a beer that you couldn't find in a triangle test.
Okay.
If I said there's two of batch 1784 and one of batch 1783...
Yeah.
You couldn't tell me which two were different.
Now, let me ask you guys that. Realistically, guys, tell me. Could we do a triangle test of one of your homebrews and not tell the difference? Are you able to be... that consistent?
No. We would have to have Anheuser-Busch's lab.
Right. But we're just talking about
If we had enough... other beers to blend, we could do it.
Okay. Tasty, what's your answer? Could you do it?
Some beers I could. I could do two batches. Because there's an age issue, right? The first batch.
That's why you've got to brew back to back.
I'm talking 2 years apart. Can we do it 2 years apart?
Well, the longer, yeah, they're going to converge together over time. Sure.
But yeah, and
then you'd have to blend to get it right. I understand. Yeah,
but if I gave you 3 days... I've tasted both of these men's beers for like 15 years. They both could do it, so don't let them fool you.
If I gave you 3 days,
I could tell you
the same beer, one batch each day,
yeah.
In a triangle test, do you think I wouldn't be able to pick out the other?
I can make it so you couldn't tell.
Yeah, I think on some beers I might be able to do
that. You think you could do that?
But one would be as good as the other. I guarantee you one would be as good as the other.
Yeah, you would be, if side by side, you could tell a little difference. If I gave you one and 15 minutes later I gave you another one, you couldn't tell the difference.
Right.
Side by side, like this, yes, you could.
Plus, I probably wouldn't be sober, let's be honest.
Yeah. The key is can you pick the odd beer out in a triangle test?
Oh, you'd like them both.
You know, if you can pick the odd beer out in a triangle test, then that's the tightest tasting we could possibly do.
I don't know if I could do that.
Okay. You don't know if you could do it? Pull it off, Tasty? All right. Let's move on. What's another... So we talked about numbers. I brought up repetition. What's another key to consistent brewing?
One of my things has always been trusting your equipment. And a big thing is thermometers. You know, you're using the same thermometer for a year.
Okay.
You better calibrate that sucker, or your hydrometer, or whatever you're calibrating. I've had
how often? Every batch?
No, okay. No. Just every once in a while when you think something's going on. Start calibrate your thermometer. When you're mashing, 2 degrees is a big deal. 3 degrees, 4 degrees is a big deal. I've had mine off 4 degrees. I use when I'm. Matt, I have three different thermometers going. I've got an electronic one. I've got two bimetal ones going. I know what's going on. And when they're not all meshing together, I'm suspicious.
And just out of curiosity, how do you calibrate for 150?
I have a.
Do you calibrate in boiling water, or do you? Do you make a salt?
I have a lab thermometer.
All right, sorry.
Oh, okay.
How does a normal person calibrate for 150 dot?
I would use a. Well, no, you have to have something that's gonna. Boiling water is one way, and freezing water is the other.
Yeah.
Well, but you can make salt mixtures that'll boil at lower temperatures or whatever. Yeah.
But
you have other options.
But that's not normal mash temperatures. You want to have something you can trust. Spend some money on a lab calibrated thermometer in that range.
How much money are we talking here? Do you know?
$50.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, probably not even that much. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get a narrow range
with a
mercury thermometer.
Mercury thermometer. You don't
for $25.
You don't use it for everything. You put
you
it.
You don't
in,
use it. You only use it to calibrate.
Put it in. If it's I put it in my mash, and if it's the same as the one my bimetal, I'm good.
Okay.
And or once in a while, when I'm cleaning everything out, I'm taking everything apart. That's what I'm doing. I will go in. I will boil water. I'll put it at 150, and my lab thermometer goes in. If it's 150, my bimetal's not there. I'm calibrating that thing.
Yeah.
So things change. So you don't want to just expect that, hey, I bought it this way, it's going to stay the same.
Yeah. I do pocket thermometers about once a month, and I do process thermometers about once a year.
The staple of the home brewer is the Ranco type controller.
Right, and I don't.
Those things over time, the stuff fills up on those and it changes.
Yeah, over.
So in the front of my Ranco, there's a +1 written.
Yeah.
And there, you know, or there used to be now. Some of them that say +2.
Can't
plus
you
one
just?
Yeah, I do the same thing. My Ranco, just because it's electronic doesn't mean it's.
Right.
Right.
What do you mean? Just because it's digital doesn't mean it's right?
Yeah. I can't get any two of mine to read the same thing.
Speaking on lab thermometers, you have to buy the one that's within the range you want to test.
Right.
It may go from 0 to 250, but it's only accurate from, say, 50 to 150 or 100 to 180, and that's what you want to have.
So can't you just check all your thermometers rectally, and isn't your body temperature always the same, and you would then know?
Well, because when you've been drinking, your body temperature goes up.
Oh, so it's not always the same.
Outside.
Yeah.
And
by the way, I apologize to all the people dining at Downtown Joe's for my thermometer joke.
Yeah, right. So back to don't trust everything.
Don't assume
equipment-wise, don't assume that it's as good as the day you bought it.
I see.
One of the best lessons I was ever given is every tool is a kit.
Yeah.
And you just look at it. A tool is a kit. It's something that might help you do something if you understand every way it can work and every way it can go wrong.
You got to dial it in.
But if you don't understand your tool, then it's not very valuable to you.
Okay.
You know, a lighter to a bird isn't very useful.
I got a new lathe, and I've been lathing stuff in the garage right and left, and you know what? And I'm still learning it.
I haven't gotten lathe in like a week.
Yeah. Really? Well, you can't be, but you could.
Yeah. But have access to showers, you know. It's kind of like.
They can't hear out there anyway. Colin, don't worry.
I don't know. There was an awfully dirty look that shot back over here.
In the bathroom, they can.
Drop all kinds of bombs right now. No one knows what we're saying up here, man.
In the bathroom, boy. They sure
know. Leave the people in the bathroom know what the hell's going on up here.
Yeah, you know, he probably missed that waterless funeral.
Hey, you people in the bathroom, come up here and give us a high five when you come back, okay?
Yeah. By the way, I'm breaking my cardinal rule, but because it's really good, I'm eating a...
On the microphone?
Eating on the phone.
It's an energy bar made from beer.
Yeah.
It's not really beer. It's malt extract, so it's almost
beer.
Brew
bar. I had some of those last weekend.
I don't even know. I think they're just now officially available, right? Can you get brew bars now in the local, in your stores? Oh, it's not even available yet. In 3 weeks, they'll be available. And have you had this stuff yet?
I haven't, no.
So feel free. I won't yell at you. This is the one time I won't yell at you for chomping on my microphone. But it's really good stuff. And it's actually, there's different flavors, and it's made from malt extract. Mm. All right, so keep an eye out for this stuff. I don't want to give the name away too much, because we'll all go looking to buy it, and it won't even be available, but it's a brew bar, basically.
B-R-U.
Yeah, because you know how energetic all of us homebrewers are. We're like out hiking in the morning.
Oh, yeah, first thing
we jogged
did.
Today, as a matter of fact. I jogged 5 miles before I came here. Colin, you believe it?
When I'm thinking, you know, if I can't drink enough beer to like, get my brew gut going,
right.
I'm going to eat some of it.
Yeah.
I like the umlaut over the U to make the smiley face.
Yes, it's clever. I do like it, too.
Umlaut. Right.
Chomp away, guys. Use your free pass now, Doc. I won't give you them very often. All right, what's next?
Don't even do that.
Brewing consistency. Do we have another tip from Tasty over there?
Yeah, I got something here. You know, my biggest fear is that I would, like, accidentally, you know, through a formula change or a process change, make a beer that's just fantastic. And then my fear would be that I couldn't make it again. So
that's happened to me.
Yeah. Like, wow. It's like. So, I mean, I'm really, even in my process, if something unusual happens, I'm sure to note that. So that could explain why I can't make the beer again. I'll go back and make that same mistake or something.
Well, unfortunately, I couldn't make the same mistake. So I was building the Tantric IPA recipe, which is the beer I drink the most here. If I'm just like walking out to the faucets and I grab a beer, it's a Tantric IPA.
And what about the Pliny down the street? You drink a lot of that too, don't you?
No, not anymore. Blind Pig, I drink more often now.
You weaned yourself off?
Yeah, I weaned myself off the Pliny. I drink Blind Pig now and the Hopsicle from Moylan's.
Oh, yeah, Kim and I, by the way, had a bet going when I needed you here for soundcheck. I was like, well, he had to run an errand. And Kim goes, you mean he's at Bilko's having a Pliny
now,
right now?
Actually, I was swimming in my pool
with
my 4-year-old.
Oh, nice. Oh,
because I promised that her that I would swim with her this afternoon.
Because Kim was like,
and you were an hour late,
you.
And I knew she was going to be furious if I didn't swim with her.
Right.
So we went and swam for a half an hour.
Nice. Sorry I took you away from that.
You know, it actually worked out fine.
It was pretty funny because really Kim said it, and I was like, you know what? He is down at Bilko's having a beer right now.
That is something I would do. Yeah.
All right, anyway, carry on.
But in any case, I had a boil over.
Yeah.
I threw the first 60-minute hops in.
So how much of that blew over is what you wonder, right?
Well, what happened was it literally just touched it. Just kissed the kettle, and it all ended up on the brew house floor. Just literally boomeranged right out of the kettle. So I looked at it, and I said, well,
I did an estimation.
You know, what the hell am I going to do? I'm going to make the same hop addition again, because it's also, you know, just my whole floor is green.
It was all there, so. Yeah.
So my whole floor is green, so I did it again. So the batch comes out. It's the best batch of IPA I've ever made.
No,
I have never been able to get close to it to this day.
Yeah, right.
And you just don't know. And I can go back in the logbooks and find it. because it's the one where it says the kettle ejected all
exploded,
the hops.
Exploded,
you know? Yeah. Well, that's the danger of brewing. You might do that.
How much did it explode?
It's really scary.
All of it, son of it.
So there are times when it's impossible to reproduce a beer, unless you're, like Doc mentioned earlier, unless you have the lab of Anheuser-Busch.
There's going to be the
occasion that you can't do it, right?
My theory is in that few seconds, I extracted some things without extracting some other things that made that batch special.
And
I probably could, you know, make a basket and dip hops in at 60 minutes and take them away.
But until somebody sets up a test and studies this, it's just a theory.
Yeah. It's the lost recipe.
It's like the fish that got away. But I still get customers that ask for it. You remember that batch?
It
coincided with one of my employees' bar mitzvahs.
Nice.
And his father still comes in every day. You remember that keg of beer you gave me for my son's bar mitzvah?
Yeah.
You know, now the kid's like 20.
Right.
It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up again. No, I can't repeat it, okay? All right, what else, Colin? You were going to jump in. Is there anything else consistency-wise that we need to focus on?
Well, I think it's really important because one of the things I don't think we've really emphasized enough is why learn how to be consistent. You learn how to be consistent so that when you make recipe changes, they're deliberate. They're not accidental. Yep. That's why you need to know how to be consistent. If you can't be consistent, then you can't make a deliberate recipe change.
Okay.
How to be consistent is to be able to measure the variables.
Okay.
If you can't measure things, you can't keep them consistent.
Can anybody be consistent, or is there certain equipment needed? Aside from the measuring tools we've talked about, but what I mean is...
OCD
so
is
my
needed.
First... Oh, you need OCD? Okay.
Pretty much.
You just really got to be observant. Yeah. For instance, like the level of the boil. The level of the boil is could be a really variable thing, right? If you're brewing outside in a metal kettle, the cold air is going to affect how much heat you need to put into the kettle to get the same boil.
Okay.
So if you're trying to be consistent on a beer between summertime and wintertime, you have to be able to be an observer and watch the action of the boil. Like, well, how big a rolling boil is this? Maybe I need to back down on the heat because it's in direct sunlight. I mean, I'm not losing anything.
And so what you need to write down is what was your evaporation rate?
Well, exactly.
Because that's really important.
Right.
And if you don't take a height of the kettle measurement before and the end of boil,
you don't know what
your evaporation rate is. And that changes tons of flavors. The boil is so important.
Just to put it in perspective, if sometimes you brew a 10-gallon batch, on the same equipment, you brew a 5-gallon batch.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
It's going to be different.
Yeah, okay.
And that's extreme.
Okay.
Because your boil level is lower, and you're not going to get the evaporation rate blowing off the top. So you're putting more heat in. You're going to get more kettle caramelization.
Okay.
You're not going to get the evaporation rate at the same point with the same amount of heat you're putting in.
That's a good point, Doc. You're saying basically in a the same recipe in the same equipment, 6-gallon versus 12, it's going to be a different beer.
Yeah, with the same equipment. Well, the unvariable part is your same equipment. You got that long, tall...
The shape of the vessel.
Tall vessel.
One of the things we think about a lot is surface area to volume ratio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really important in every vessel. Yeah. And you start changing that surface area to volume ratio, like you buy a new brewery so you can make more beer, and you change those surface area to volume ratios.
Oh, like an over Russian river?
And it really changes the way everything works.
Is your boil kettle changing from a soup can to a tuna can?
Yeah.
Right.
It will make a big difference.
It really does.
Okay.
It makes a huge difference. And not only in boil, but in fermentation. A great example is when Sierra Nevada wanted to make the Kellerweiss, which if you haven't tried Sierra Nevada Kellerweiss, you have to get a bottle. It is by far my favorite German wheat beer.
Is that right?
Ever made.
Okay.
I think they have it here.
Made.
I love it. I do have it here. I keep it here. I don't advertise that it's here, but I sell about 4 cases a week.
You have bottles here?
I have it in bottles, yeah.
I'm coming home with some.
I'm trying to get it in kegs, but they won't give it to me in kegs.
You can get it at the Bedmo.
I've been fighting them about it.
Big Tim
loves Hefeweizens and wheat beers and just all that in general. So I need to bring some home.
Well, when how they built the recipe, or at least my understanding of it is, I haven't heard this from the brewers. I've heard it from the sales guys at Sierra Nevada.
Right.
So, but what the sales guys tell me is that they sent the brewing department over to Germany. They said, go drink a bunch of Hefeweizens. Tell us which ones you like and talk to the brewers and figure out how to make them. Come back, we'll brew some beer. And they came back with the bottle that they decided was the best, or the keg, or whatever.
Right.
What they decided was the best beer. And they came back with an idea of how to make it, and they made it, and it was terrible. And Ken Grossman looked at them all, and they said, look, we're getting on an airplane. We're all going together. And so this time, Ken goes with them.
I see.
And they all go, and they all have the same conversation. And it turns out that what made these beers work was big, flat fermenters that had lots of off-gassing.
Okay,
because the yeast produced so much flavor and so much character that concentrated in the conicals that we used, they tasted like crap. But in these big, shallow, flat fermenters that all outgassed, and they were subtle and refined and delicious.
And they don't like pressure either. So at the bottom of that long, tall conical.
Right.
Well, there's more chance for it to absorb, too. I mean.
So Sierra's got open fermenters. So they came back and they brewed the same recipes, the same ideas in those open fermenters.
So, that off-gassing, taste you said, it's not going to get absorbed back in the beer.
That's right.
It'd be too much of everything.
Right.
Great. Now I have to go read John Palmer's Kettle Dynamics bullshit to understand what you guys
are
talking about.
Understand.
I think we have a podcast about that. You have to read it all.
We must. It's probably already there, right?
Yeah.
5 years. It's got to be there.
It's got to be there.
Good
they got
Lord.
To that, I'm sure.
All right. How about this? We're going to take our last break. It's 8 o'clock, man.
Nice. It's a beautiful sunny day here.
It just
the bar's
got
full
nice
of people.
Yeah, we
it's
got a lot of people here. We're going to take a long break. We're going to take a few minutes here. I got to go use one of those waterless urinals. And when we come back.
Can't hear yourself in there.
I'm going to go listen to myself.
Yeah. It's so
nice. Put the music on so you're not alone.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I do like to listen to myself. And,
but it's so much better than out here.
I might actually camp in your bathroom tonight, Colin. I'm going to park the Westie outside.
You know, it might be a little busy till 2.
Right.
But after that, until about 7 in the morning, it's all yours.
That's fine. I won't be ready till 2 anyway.
You guys crank it back up at 7?
Yeah, about 7, they go into the bathrooms to clean. We start serving breakfast.
They can just clean right over me. I need a cleaning anyway. It'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll just bleach you down. you were planning on going to New Mexico, so we don't want you to get carded.
All right, they'll put one of those tags on you.
I like how Colin just slipped that little political statement in. Yeah. All right, so quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up Consistent Brewing. We'll probably have a little fun. We'll make fun of our intern producer today. He's an intern today because he's in training. Moscow's here helping us out, and then we'll get out of here. Hang in there. It's the session.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Stop. Madison, what is it?
Shh. Listen. I think I hear a dwarven ale.
A what?
A dwarven ale.
But there's no such thing.
Aye, lad. But soon, there will be.
Hail Brewers! Fantasy Brewmasters invites you to participate in their 2010 Dwarf Brew Recipe Contest. Do you dig fantasy? Have you ever wondered what sort of ale a wizard might come across at his local tavern? Have you ever wanted to find out what a dwarf in ale really tastes like? Yeah, you know who you are. And here's your chance to show your geek pride. Submit what you think would be the ultimate dwarf in beer, and your recipe could be chosen for commercial production as their flagship beer.
Entrants must be a U.S. resident, 21 years of age or older. Log on to www.fantasybrewmasters.com to register and for contest rules and more details.
For this contest, they're looking to brew an authentic dwarfen beer of your creation along the lines of a very drinkable brown ale.
Registration deadline is Tuesday, August 31st.
The winner takes home $1,000, plus they get to see their beer brewed commercially. Go to fantasybrewmasters.com now.
It's not some old fantasy character beer. It's f***ing dwarfing ale.
Fantasybrewmasters.com. When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator Wort Chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
So we've got Scott Moskow. He was our interim producer while Shat went on vacation, and we're training him now to help us produce his show because I don't know if you know this, Colin, but Shat over there has joined the ranks of the professional brewers.
Congratulations.
And yeah, that's right. That's right.
Nice.
So he's still going to be helping out with topics and whatever the hell else I can get him to do for me. But he's like, I'm effing out of here. But he's going to be brewing for EJ Fair at
Congratulations.
Their new brewery.
Yeah. That's big news.
So while Shat is transitioning to pro brewer, we've got Scott Moskow here training to be the producer.
Hi, Scott.
And right now he's getting to learn how much it sucks to chase after that midget Doc and get him to sit down at Showtime.
He's been really good at chasing me down.
Doc's been doing this show for 5 years. He was on our very first show. He's been doing it the whole time. The little midget still can't figure out that a break is only so long, and he's got to get his ass back here to perform again.
He literally waited for me to say it's time, and then he went to take a leak. Twice.
And so Chad,
I bet he can hear us really well.
Know, Chad would come up to me. He still does every week. He's like, I'm sick of it. These guys don't know how long a break is. It's been this long, and they still can't figure out. And I'm like, Chad, I don't know what to tell you.
And then I turn into the asshole because I'm tapping him on the shoulder. And
right.
Doc, I'm trying to move him on. I need to get border collies start nipping at their ankles.
or tasers or something.
Something.
You know how you can put up like a border of electric fence around the table? Well, get used to it, Scott. It is your job to wrangle these people in now. So
I'm trying to pee in the bathroom and I'm listening.
And Scott's tapping you on the shoulder while you're peeing?
No. I'm listening to you guys rag on me.
Oh. It sounds really good in the bathroom.
It sounds really good in the bathroom.
The ragging sounded perfect.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yes, Bevo.
So I'm just a bit confused.
Yeah.
I just used the restroom. There was water in my toilet.
Ah,
it's
because
not water.
You have a toilet. We're talking about the urinal. Unless you pee standing up,
I don't.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I could, though.
You're a freaky lady. Actually,
you know, there's
Colin,
a whole website dedicated to women standing up.
You're going to, now, so I've been camping a lot with the woods lately, because like I said, we both have these Westphalia campers. And Kim, being the, oh, I don't know, how do we put it, eccentric young
badass
lady that she,
badass.
that's right.
That she is found a way. It's a utensil that allows women to urinate standing up.
Oh, the pee funnel?
It's the funnel. Yes,
the pee funnel.
It has its own. It has its own mount, if you will, a cup, and then it has a
large, small, and medium,
a funnel, okay. And you're able to just stand there like a man. Colin's looking at me like, shut up.
Just for the record,
I'm still in the restaurant.
Doc and I had the conversation about the pilot's friend already today.
Just for the record,
yes.
I have drunk peed standing up into a Gatorade bottle.
See, without the funnel.
With no funnel, I'm just that cool.
No. If you really want to have a good time, get into a distance competition.
With a woman?
Women always win.
Is that right?
Well, Justin, I have a friend that, I'm sitting there having a conversation with her, and now I'm like at the urinal, and she's at the urinal, and there's other guys saying, what are you doing at the urinal?
What
and she's
the? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Is facing the same direction as you?
Yeah.
Nice. Wow. I have, biologically,
you
I am
not
a little behind.
Forever, were you?
No.
There's a whole
Little
website.
Fair, all the men's rooms were co-ed.
I see.
There's a whole website to teach them
dedicated
how.
To this.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought it was fascinating, Kim, and I appreciated you.
I'm not saying it's not fascinating.
Enlightening me.
Yeah, thanks for showing him that. Yeah.
It's also pink. Yeah, it is. Well, it has to be feminine, doesn't it? Just because you're standing up and peeing doesn't mean you're not feminine. It has to be pink. All right, a couple of things to wrap up. I did have a couple of comments for you, Colin. One of them, Cali Pro, or Cal Pyro, I forget. I think it's Cali Pro, in the chat room, wanted to say, hey, thanks to you for always having us here and for being a cool guy at Downtown Joe's.
Oh, well,
so he just,
it's a win-win situation, so thank you guys for listening, and thank you for coming out.
It's
cool to be cool.
The other question for you, Colin, was, do you know what beer the Sierra Nevada boys liked, that Keller beer that they wanted to reproduce?
You know, I was told what brewery it was.
Okay.
But I don't know. I'm a big Anglophile when it comes to brewing.
Right.
I love British beers. I know a lot about British breweries and what yeast they use. All these little esoteric details. I don't know anything about German breweries.
Right. Yeah. You heard the name and it was 45 syllables long and you was like, I can't remember it.
Four words connected together.
Yes.
I remembered it about as long as, you know, the girl you
was.
Didn't want to date at the bar.
Right. I think it was Beer Schweinchenstaffer.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Can you check on that?
I could, actually. I could find out.
I would love that.
Look at Doc wants it, too.
Yeah, they actually ended up taking the yeast back from the brewery as well.
And it still didn't work.
No, actually, that was
the first
still
time.
Using
the first
the
time.
Yeast, yeah.
No.
How did they get that? Is that your Ken Grossman and you can have anything you want kind of thing? Or were the Germans just cool?
Personally, I think brewers... I didn't ever ask this question, so I'm just talking out my ass here.
Yeah.
But I think brewers are just cool.
Right.
I would give anybody my yeast or any of my recipes.
So,
I don't care.
So did the yeast ride first class back with Ken Grossman?
Right. Because you can't reproduce this anything. Take it.
You take it. It is not riding in coach, is it?
Exactly. This must stay with Ken, not in coach. It must be in first.
Okay. You guys haven't been to Bavaria. Bavaria is a lot more relaxed.
Oh, I love Bavaria.
But we're talking about jetting over the pond.
Yeah. All right, what I wanted to do was just wrap up any good beer information that we have about consistency. If it's
one of the beers, I was just given a beer that was absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
And it was a clone of a professional beer.
Yes.
And it wasn't, it didn't remind me of that beer. But okay. It was a very delicious beer. And I think the reason why it didn't remind me of that beer is because there was too much oxygen added pre-fermentation.
Okay. And, aerating and, the wort for yeast.
Yeah.
Too much.
Which yeah.
You can do that?
I describe the character as watery.
All right.
That's how I describe it.
You've been talking to Jamil, haven't you? He is Mr. Too Much Oxygen.
You do know what we're doing. Yeah. We're launching into about a 15-minute diatribe here.
Oh, boy.
And to make it work?
Yeah, go ahead, though.
No, I'm into it.
Okay, TikTok's ready.
I am.
Let's go, because this is something that Chris and I have talked about a bunch, too.
I'm just
gonna can't be too much.
I'm just going to sit over here and eat my brew bar. You guys carry on.
Okay. Yeah.
So what I've noticed is that at some point, flavors change.
Yeah.
And there are flavors you can get at a certain oxygen level that you can't get with a higher oxygen level. If that is part of your recipe, then you can over-oxygenate.
Which is consistency, too. If you're going to oxygenate at a certain level,
then
measure it and keep it at that point.
I have a flow meter just for that purpose.
Yeah. You're going to change the characteristics of the yeast by feeding them too much oxygen.
I don't. I feed them too little.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I make them struggle just a little bit because they're a little bit more ester.
And making them struggle, especially, I've noticed it big time with German Hefeweizens. A lot of people want to underpitch, and you want to under-oxygenate.
Yep.
To make them stress.
It makes them stress a little bit more, and they do more things for you.
That's right. They give you more flavors. And so this particular beer was fermented with OO2. Which normally I find really fruity. I find a little bit of diacetyl.
Mm-hmm.
This example, though, with OO2, was really clean, really fresh, and really bright. It didn't have that English character that I was looking for.
That's
the
good.
Classic symptom of over-oxygenation.
Yeah, that's one reason why I don't like to use OO2. In the flocculation issue. But,
yeah, it's a heavy flocculator.
Yeah,
and it flocculates before it eats its diacetyl.
But it's a diacetyl, and I'm a heavy diacetyl taster, and I taste it in small quantities, and I really hate it.
See, I kind of like it. I want it
That's because you like those English
beers. In an IPA,
I
want it to be right at the threshold of detection in an IPA. I want to go, is there diacetyl? Oh, yes, there is. I wouldn't have noticed if I didn't think to look for it.
Yeah.
I want it to be right at that threshold.
And me, it's like...
Anything?
I wish I would have not done that.
I think Tasty's a little more like you too, Duck. I don't know that I've ever detected diacetyl in any of Tasty's beers.
I never had that problem.
Yeah. Well, you seem to brew what you don't like. You push towards what you... don't like and try to exclude what you don't like.
Right.
And for Tasty and me, it's diacetyl. We just don't like it in there.
You know, I like acetaldehyde as well. And if I can force my yeast into producing...
You like acetobacter too?
No. But if I can force my yeast into producing a tiny bit of acetaldehyde, I will.
It's a flavor enhancer, huh?
Yeah, well,
yeah, it is. It's a crispy, fruity
character. You think it makes the beer taste fresh.
Isn't that style dependent, Colin? That's not across the board, is it?
No. But acetaldehyde's pretty much considered an off flavor by most people.
But I mean, you would only want it in one or two of your beers, right? You wouldn't try to make it in all of them.
I only want it in one.
Okay.
Yeah, I only want it in my wheat.
In your wheat beer. Okay.
And I can produce it consistently in my wheat and like
to. It lends an issue of freshness to a beer because it's a green beer flavor.
I see.
And if you can dial it in, I'm sure he has.
Right.
You're going to get that freshness quality. And if it's in his wheat beer, that's what you want. You want the freshest, cleanest kind of thing you can have.
Okay.
And that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to push the envelope here with a little acetaldehyde.
Yeah. For people who don't know this chemical, it tastes like green apples.
Yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
And it's bright and fresh and I like it.
Imagine biting into a Granny Smith and it's like that tart.
Yeah.
Thing.
It's got that little.
Yeah.
Right at the threshold of detection, I love it.
Tasty's the best one for threshold of detection.
What?
Just enough drop to make it, you know, or just enough this to make it.
Yeah.
Detectable.
Okay.
Yeah. There's certain things like spices and so forth that do better when they're just barely below the surface.
Everything's better when it's below the surface. It really is.
It's complexity. It's complexity rather than flavor.
It's not to the point where you like it. It's to the point where you can just detect it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that's the way I think about a lot of these characteristics.
Okay.
You know, then there's something... I heard secondhand, and I don't know if this quote really came from Vinny, but I heard this quote from Vinny, and he said, you know, brewing yeasts are like dogs. You can just make them do tricks just like that.
Okay.
And wild yeasts are like having cats. You herd them into a corner, and you do the best you can with them. I don't use any wild yeast. My brewing yeast, there's three of which that I have hundreds of batches of experience on. They're like dogs. I can just make them do tricks. And if I just say, okay, you're producing acetaldehyde, they're going to produce acetaldehyde. And I can do it every time.
Okay. See, I would say they're like women. You could...
No.
Just waiting for the punch waiting for a woman to come up and punch me in the face right now.
Yeah, all right. Got a lot of
consistency.
Okay, so consistency, back it up just for a second so I can bring it back around. You also need to be consistent with your aeration, not too much.
And your pitching rate.
And your pitching rate. Anything else, gentlemen?
Consistent fermentation temperature. Consistency in fermentation is huge.
Yeah, one of the big things is fermentation temperature. When you're brewing with the carboy in the corner,
yeah,
it's going up, it's going down, it's going all over. The yeast don't know what's going on.
Like putting a Grundy in your bar?
Yeah, pretty yeah, much. Yeah.
Like at least I had control over my fermentation temperature.
Right, right, true.
I still had fermenters
at least
that
his beer
that's
was
true.
Done at that point. But you got to think that these are animals that don't know whether they're going to be freezing tomorrow or they're going to be boiling tomorrow.
They don't like stress.
They don't like stress up and down. So if you can keep things consistent,
okay,
it's very predictable at that point.
You know, I've been doing a lot of reading on the yeast genome recently.
Of course you have, Colin.
And one of the
we read that kind of stuff all the time ourselves.
Light reading.
One of the things that's really interesting about not only the yeast genome, but we use yeast to study other animals because yeast is the simplest of all the cells that have most of the characteristics of animal cells. Hmm. So there's thousands of papers about yeast that have nothing to do with beer. And one of the things that's really interesting about these genome studies of yeast is it takes a long time for yeast to change what it's trying to do. So if it says, okay, I've run out of maltose, now I've got to ferment dextrose, it takes 12 hours for it to make that decision. It can't just go, oh, I'm done with that, and I'm going to start fermenting right now.
What else is around?
Interesting.
Yeah, it can't do that. So what it's got to do is go, well, this is kind of going wrong, so let's figure out what we can do.
Still hungry.
And then it moves on to this new, entirely different genetic machinery, and it has to make all of these new proteins
enzymes.
And new enzymes.
New enzymes, everything to make that machinery work.
To make that machinery work. So if you're taking your yeast and you're running it through this roller coaster, it's having to use all its energy to start this new machinery up and then decommission it and then start it up again and then decommission it. And all of that energy is going to make it lazy and leave off flavors in the beer.
Be out of gas.
And leave flavors that you don't want at the end of fermentation.
Okay. Have you finished your time machine yet, Colin?
Let's go.
You still working on that?
I'm still here.
Okay. That's true.
Are you?
Are you back?
All right, I'm going to force us to wrap up consistency. So,
okay.
So in other words, you guys are out of ideas, right? Great. I did have a question for you, going back to something we talked about earlier, Colin, from one of our listeners. Let's see. The BioClear that you're using.
BioFine Clear.
The BioFine Clear. How fast does it work compared to gelatin?
I can do... My tanks are about 5 feet deep. And they settle 5 feet in about an hour and 45 minutes.
Sweet. And gelatin used to take what?
About 2.5 hours. Oh. Well, I didn't use gelatin. I used isinglass.
Okay.
Never used gelatin.
Got it.
Okay. Isinglass, you know, yeah, it was costing me $7 a batch. So that's really expensive in the world of fining.
It is?
Yeah. But that's not very expensive in my world. So,
right,
yeah.
Right. It tastes so, just like, what the?
What's a few bucks here and there, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So
you just spent $750,000 on this building.
Right, but $7 a batch.
Yeah, let's go
yeah,
10.
So
come on.
Everybody kept saying, oh, there's cheaper ways to do this. You can use gelatin. You can do blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? I don't care if this is the most expensive fining I can buy. It works. I know how to use it. It's consistent.
Okay.
Done.
There you go.
And BioFine's cheaper, it's faster, it's easier, it's mindless.
How do you use it?
It comes
liquid?
It comes as a liquid. When I'm filling in my aging tank, I put in 1 liter to 7 barrels.
Okay.
And the filling of the aging tank lets it stir.
Okay, so...
And then I just let it sit. So, and an hour and 45 minutes later, it's crystal clear out of the sample port.
How about us with corny kegs? Do we have to... with my gelatin, I mix them up and then...
All you do is pour it in first and then fill on top of it.
Okay, so it does have to be mixed. What if I've got a corny keg I've already filled? Can I put it on top and let it just go down?
Well, if it's filled and carbonated...
No, we don't do that. We fill it, and if it's not carbonated.
Okay, so filled and not carbonated, I would rock it on my knee.
Doc.
Okay.
We don't do that.
If it's filled and carbonated, you'd vent it, and that's enough bubbles to stir it all in.
Okay, good. If
it's filled and not carbonated, you've got to rock it on your knee.
Yes, I've watched demonstrations of... clear vessels where they've actually mixed the gelatin through. And it's really amazing how much it takes to mix it all through.
This doesn't take very much at all. When I was, the best way to use gelatin is actually to make a suspension and inject it during the transfer.
Yeah.
And so what you do is you have pinpoint injection that injects during the whole transfer. And that's the best way to mix it. This kind of stuff, it's mindless. You just literally pour it in while everything's turbulent during transfer.
So I can put it in my 5-gallon corny, fill on top of it, that's mixed.
And that's mixed.
Oh, good.
And that's beyond mixed. That's over-mixed.
That's sweet.
Although you've just ruined the fun of Doc having to build an inline gelatin injector.
I have one. He can borrow mine.
I
used to inject 4 gallons into every transfer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's $7.
Yeah, 4 gallons. It was what I would do is I would make up isinglass into 2 gallons, and then I'd dilute it into 4, and then I'd inject it.
I just hope we can get this clarifying agent in small batches for home brewers.
Well, Tasty seems to think that we can. It's just under a different name.
I have a friend or two at More Beer. They'd be willing to repackage it.
Oh, you do? More Beer's our sponsor today, by the way. We want to thank them for sponsoring the program. All right. So I've made Tasty take a break. We've got Andy Wood back up here. Tasty's kind of old. He has to relax every now and then.
No,
chill out.
This is a meet.
He's giving me the look right now like he's going to beat my ass. At the end of this,
he will.
It's a meet and greet.
Before we get down to this part, there's like empty glasses around and full pitchers.
Is this going to be your 5 o'clock bullshit?
Somebody, well, you know that we are not allowed to do that anymore.
Oh, we're not.
No. Well, no. I mean, we are, but they're not.
Oh, I see.
I'm no longer in trouble. The staff is no longer allowed to drink beer while they were
at all.
And
what
it's
happened?
It
was one person, wasn't it?
It was one person.
It's always one.
It was one person, and they felt like they had been left out, and they went and complained to Joe.
Oh, you're kidding.
And Joe said, look, you can't leave people out. It's either everybody or it's nobody.
Yeah, you know.
I thought we were being secretive about you were the one person who had to run and puke the last time, and that it was your fault, but it was actually somebody felt left out.
Somebody felt left out, and they went to Joe.
I'm sick of hearing this. My wife's background is in human resource management and labor law.
There's always someone left out.
It's all or nobody.
Who do you think our left out guy is?
And the guy is one of our best employees.
Oh, really?
And he would never get left out on purpose.
Oh.
And he must have been left out on accident or something. But he felt left out.
It's pretty much you tick him in the back and you beat them senseless.
Is he still
they're
is
never
he
left
still here?
Out again.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. Hey, okay. He's still one of our best employees, yeah.
Is he here right now?
I don't know if he's here right now.
Can you point him out for the group?
He normally works Friday, Saturday.
We have him stand out in the middle and just point him out.
So Joe just said, you know what, this has been a privilege. It's been a very difficult to manage privilege.
Right.
But now we have to stop.
He makes a good point. I was always surprised, actually, at the skill that your staff was able to keep it all together. Mm-hmm. And he's right. That's a tough privilege to keep going.
It is. And, you know, we did it for 17 years.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Do you lose anybody because of that?
I can't drink. I'm out of here, man.
No, we lost people because they were too drunk to work. And it's like, okay, you can't fit into the team.
Andy's like that.
Whatever
with
his you want to classify it as, that's fine.
And if you can't drink, you're out of there, right, Andy?
Oh, yeah. If you can't hold your liquor, you shouldn't be teaching.
I'm pretty sure that's a t-shirt you get when you pass the teacher's bar or whatever the hell
it is. It's part of your credential program.
Yeah.
They give you a list of beers to drink.
What flavor Listerine doesn't show up?
I have to say,
that's the best part.
I am so old that one of my teachers used to smoke in class.
Doc, come on, you have to have a story about that too, don't you?
I had a teacher that used to drink Listerine.
Awesome. Right in class.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's like you just smell it on them.
I used to drink Plax when I was a kid because
so good.
Get a nice buzz out of it. I thought I was just cleaning my teeth, but my brother taught me that you can also get a buzz while you're doing it.
Sure.
So
whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Plax, Listerine.
At that point.
Benadryl.
All right, Colin's filling me up here. Well, it's been a lot of fun, as always, out here at Downtown Joe's.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, before we get too far into just acting silly, I wanted to thank once again all of our listeners for coming out here, as always.
Yeah.
A round of applause to you guys.
Finish that.
It really, it not only... You know, it wouldn't be fun for us to do it if you guys weren't here, but Colin probably wouldn't invite us back because you buy beer and it like actually helps the bar tab go up. So,
but, you know, it's the only way you guys will listen to me if I pay you to come out.
Right, it's true. Now, Chris here, you know, Chris comes every time. I can't tell if it's because he doesn't have any friends or he just really enjoys our company.
You know, he does come, alone. He comes alone.
Yes. I love seeing you here every time, Chris. Thank you for coming. And he's what I love more about seeing Chris here every time is he wears a different BN shirt, which means he's paying me. Every time he has a different, whatever the new shirt is, Chris is wearing it, and that means I get paid by that man.
I need to say this about the Brewing Network. You know, and I call you guys the BN Army. And I know there's kind of a difference.
That's the listeners are the Army.
That's how I look at it, is the listeners are the Army. Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, the whole time during the retrofit, I got 10 or 15 listeners a week that came in and said,
nice.
Hey, you know what? You know, you guys are going through a lot of construction, but I've heard about you on the radio for years. I had to come see you.
Beautiful.
Awesome. It is by far the best dollars I spend on advertising.
Is that right?
It is by far. And for every dollar I spend, I get a table.
Right. Okay.
The other day, all of these really gorgeous mid-20s women.
You're welcome.
Walk into the brewery.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody on the staff is like,
right.
Who the hell are these people, right? I mean, they are just drop-dead gorgeous,
should
beautiful
not be in
makeup,
your place, yeah.
Brand new fingernails, the
okay.
whole trip.
Yes.
And they all come in the brewery to take pictures with me.
Oh. Are you kidding me? These people never come up to me, Colin.
And so I walk out from the brewery, you know. I'm brewing, so I'm like exhausted, sweaty, smelly.
Right.
And I walk out to the brewery with a big smile on my face, and Joe says, and the table sits outside and orders everything on the menu.
Wow.
And Joe's like, who are those people? And I said, she's engaged to a Brewing Network listener.
Oh, man. I love it. I get to meet this guy. This is what I get. You get hot blondes coming in here, and I get that guy and brewer.
You know what? I get the best beer tourists there are.
That's cool, man.
And everybody comes in, and everybody, if somebody reads about me in the Napa Register, they don't tell me why they came here.
Right.
Everybody who listens to the Brewing Network comes in and says, I'm listening to you because you support the Brewing Network.
I see.
And so we get a huge amount of feedback. It's really valuable to
us. Well, our listeners are good at that, and they ask what we can do to help, and I just say, well, just tell sponsors you're thankful, and they do, so I dig it.
And it works, and you know, it even in...
The 10% discount doesn't hurt, by the way.
I dropped a lot of advertising in the last 6 months.
Okay.
One of my main goals was to not drop the Brewing Network.
Thank you.
Because it's such good feedback. It's the exact right people.
Right. Well, you've kept it up for a long time, and I appreciate it. I mean, like, when we were meaningless, you were like, hey, how can I give you money?
Yeah, right.
I was like, I don't know, Colin. I've never thought of that before. Yeah. How can you give me money?
One of my favorite conversations we had is you're like, well, I said, you know, I need to give you $500 a month because I really think it'd be good for our business to advertise. And you're like, well, the top program I have is $300 a month.
Right, that's right, yeah. And you were like, so?
So, yeah, let me give you $500 a month. We'll work it out.
I really couldn't fathom that. I was like, wow, that's almost rent, Colin. That would be strange.
When you're figuring the gas money to come up to here.
Right.
It works out.
No, it's been great. It's a good partnership. We love doing these things out
definitely.
Here. And I'm glad the listeners are letting you know, man. Thanks.
They really are. They're just the best people ever.
Cool.
You know,
except for that guy.
That guy's the best group of people. I get a lot of annoying homebrewers that just want to ask me tons of questions.
Right.
None of them are Brewing Network people.
Oh, is that right?
No, the Brewing Network people are always the people that come in and they teach me something about brewing.
That's nice. Yeah. Except for Andy.
Right.
Who totally brought you down on Brew Day.
The human leech. I leech from you.
Yeah.
Kim and Andy are my absolute favorite Brewing Network people.
Is that right? No. Even Kim?
Kim, don't clap for yourself, Kim.
What the?
Kim actually drugged me out of my hotel room in a drunken stupor to go
really?
Taste Belgian beers in Denver.
At GABF?
Yeah, wow. That's what she's good for.
she's
really good at dragging guys out of their
going.
Hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Especially after I'm sleeping.
You know what's really funny is, because I was thinking I was going to show up and there was going to be about 20 people sitting at this table.
Right.
And I was just going to kind of sit there and kind of ponder my own thoughts. No, Kim had set up the special chair right between her and Andy.
Wow.
Sat me in the middle of it and treated me like I was a king the whole time.
You were. Well, what you haven't figured out, though, is it's because they're swingers, Colin. And they were just, that was actually just a pregame show. Come sit right here, Colin.
They have a hot tub.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing is, Kim is a swinger. I didn't know this until year 9.
I see. You've been married, what, 10 years?
10 years.
You just figured, in fact, last year in Denver is when you figured it out.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, but really good to know.
Right.
You know, right before that 9-year mark where they'd get half if you...
Listen, at least she told you. Stop complaining.
She didn't tell me. I had to find out.
Oh, right.
Visually.
That's a good point.
Tweet.
All right, Colin. Thanks for having us back once again.
Thanks for coming. Let's do it again soon.
We will, and we'll make Scott have to work more and chase Doc around. Next time we'll do it outside, so he has to like go in and outdoors.
You know, the other thing we need to do is teach him how our soundboard works. So I don't know if you're the sound tech.
You were our sound tech today. You did a good job.
I don't know anything about it. So
you did a great job. You made us sound awesome in the bathroom, and I appreciate that.
Bathroom sounds perfect.
Yeah. What more can we do?
More than perfect.
All right, thanks to our sponsor, Beer, Beer, and More Beer. They've been with us since day one also, and they bring you this show every week, and we appreciate that. Thanks to Downtown Joe's, who's also been a sponsor for a long time. It's not just while we're out here. You guys sponsor us all month long, and we appreciate that. And all of our sponsors, go check them out and buy from them and tell them thanks like you do, Colin. And buy shirts like our friend Chris does. That helps us out. And
you can buy shirts here, too.
Oh, yes. We always try to keep you stocked, too. I saw some Brew Strong stuff back there.
I need
Hop Grenade stuff for you, right?
Especially hats.
And hats. I'm out of hats myself. They're hot sellers. And smack Andy on the ass on his way out. He likes it.
Go ahead.
It's the only way to make friends with the
people. I like it.
But make sure to tweet the photo for me.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And once again, thanks to all you guys for hanging out with us. It really makes it fun, so we appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Down, double and triple on my best friend. I think I'll have them all over again. But don't you give me that American crew, for the one a real homebrew. Homebrew, don't you really love that homebrew? Can't get enough of it. Homebrew, it blows my mind. I love homebrew all of the time. Yeah, I think I'll have it. Well, I'll have it one right now. A bark will do me when the skies are gray. I'll take a Belgian brew at a time, and the women think the lambic fine. But don't you give me that American crew, boys, I want a real homebrew. Homebrew, don't you really love a better homebrew? Can't get enough of it. Homebrew, it blows my mind. I love homebrew all of the time. Yeah, I think I'll have me, well, I'm the one right now. Blows my mind. I love homebrew all the time.